该不是
的。Then the second source of income is membership fees, so we are a member-based organisation, which
We do work a quarter of the product in southern Tasmania. That makes up around about 40% of our income. Over the last 2 years, due to COVID, we've reduced our industry membership fees by 50% to support the industry through the recovery period, which has obviously impacted our business slightly. The third income stream is the memberships from local government areas. We have 11 southern councils in our area, and each council pays us around about $6,500 per year to fund that, and that's delivered through a memorandum of understanding, which is currently we're negotiating for the end of this year, to make sure that the strategic priorities you have in mind with us, that we can advocate on your behalf. I'm happy to take questions any time when they arise, because sometimes they may have disappeared.
Sorry, let's just write our questions down and then have to go from the record.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Correct. So we have three main streams of work. One is marketing, and that's about raising the profile of product within southern Tasmania. And we sit in a kind of terrible marketing speak, and I'm not a marketer, but we sit in a kind of funnel. Tourism Tasmania's job as the state tourism organisation is to create demand, used to be internationally and nationally, at the moment it's nationally, and Tourism Australia used to be purely international, they're now national. And our job, their job is to create demand and desire and aspiration to come to Tasmania. When people step into Tasmania, that's where we take over with our marketing streams. So we're more about the detail and the product. So when someone has been booked on Tasmania by Tourism Tasmania's large-scale marketing campaigns, they start researching about what to do. That's where our consumer channel is coming, which is called Hobart and Beyond. Second stream of work is really industry development. Industry development is about building the capacity of products within southern Tasmania. That can be through new product development, that can be through education, that can be through celebration, that can be collaboration, networking, those sort of things. And the third one, which has certainly come to the fore over the last 18 months, is advocacy. So we're the direct link from industry to government. So government comes to us to understand what's happening on the ground, and obviously during the COVID period, that was a pretty much the sole focus of our work, is to help the government understand what the tourism operators and businesses needed on the ground to survive and to recover through that. So our membership is spread across southern Tasmania. The important one here is that the Durban Valley and Central Hand Island, we have around about 12% of our membership in total. And that's around about 200 industry operators, but we have around about 2,000 products in southern Tasmania that we work with that are linked on the Australian Tourism Data Warehouse. So I won't spend a lot of time on digital marketing. Fundamentally, as we said, what we do is the nitty-gritty. It's about getting the products on the ground profile to raise their profile, raise awareness, so that people can then convert and book. Our main two KPIs, I suppose, are around regional dispersal, so getting people out into the regions, and increasing yield, so increasing spend. We saw this come to the fore certainly. We tended to play in intrastate markets, so moving Tasmanians around Tasmania. Obviously, during the last 12 to 18 months, that's been a real focus of ours, because that at one point was our sole market. So we work very closely with Tourism Tasmania to deliver marketing campaigns like Make Yourself at Home, which you may have seen across the press in Tasmania, to get people to spend their money within Tasmania. It was very successful. Industry development. We're really about networking and collaboration and connection. This is a little image of what we got up to during the COVID period, when we had to shift from physical events to online events. We delivered all sorts of forums during that time, about one a week, where any industry operator or local government officer could come on, log on and find out what was going on in the industry. For example, the WorkSafe forum that we put out was about when people were struggling to understand what it really means for them to code, what are the procedures, what are government asking us to do. We had about 300 people sign up online virtually to do those forums, and we continue them to this day, but we still, physical events are still one of our key areas. Once a month, we hold a thing called Tips and Tibbles, which is a networking and education event for our members. educational elements, and the one that we've got coming up in August is around inclusive tourism. So we're really at the moment focusing on how to diversify markets, and we'll talk a little bit about agritourism later on, which I think is an area of opportunity for the Central Highlands. There's a little bit of an educational aspect as well. It has a panel discussion about what inclusive tourism means, what accessible tourism means, how can we attract that market, what you're already doing in your business to that you don't even understand is actually inclusive, and being able to then explain that to the consumer and attract that market. That picture you just saw there was pre-COVID. Don't give me any hard time about being social distancing. Sure you're right. Okay, so one of the other programs that we did in the Central Highlands recently, was in November, was the Know Your Neighbour program. When we didn't have any customers, we realised that there was an opportunity there to raise the profile of products within the industry operators themselves to create advocacy across the region. So if you go for a holiday in Tasman, you're going to meet someone and spend some time in the Lerner Valley in the Central Highlands and can talk to you about the opportunity and what you can do in the next few days after that. It was also a great opportunity for products to benchmark their own operation against others' operations. A good indication of that was Gary Ashdown, who owns Ashdown's Dover, who's technically Australia's best host accommodation on the National Tourism Award in 2019. He went to a product explorer's lodge in New Norfolk, and he said he got home and he cleaned for 2 days straight. So even if you win the National Tourism Award, you can still understand other products and do some of those things a little bit better. So this has been a great program for us, and we've rolled it out across all the regions during the last time, that will continue on next year as well. Partnerships is an area that we work very hard in. We're strategic partners with the Premier's Office, the Department of Premier Cabinet, because partner state both are part funders of ours, Tourism Tasmania, but also the commercial partnerships that we hold with Cruise Mercury, and that's about leveraging opportunities with industry operators, and that worked very well during the COVID period. We managed to discount the full page efforts from $6,000 a page down to about $600 a page, and we've got a great take up to move those interest rates to that market. So about 7 Tasmania is another key partner of ours. Educationally, we work with TasTAFE and the new visitor experience training program that's implemented with TRT and THA. Workforce, especially regional workforce, is a key blocker at the moment for growth in our industry, so we're doing everything we can to support young people into this quite unattractive sector of the economy at the moment. However, as well as a key strategic partner of ours. So media and advocacy. Media is reasonably obvious. We work with the media to again raise profile of products. It's difficult to get products into media, so we have a media advisor on staff who helps us with those stories and to raise the profile, especially in the local market. And advocacy, as I said, is certainly one of the key areas. This is where I think the opportunity is for Central Highlands, is that so we can understand your strategic priorities and advocate for them into government. During the last election, this is a schematic of a development down at Isle of Bay called Transformer, which was actually first raised during the bushfires in 2019, where we landed $2 million from the federal government to put a large-scale public halfway to drive regional visitation after Tahoe Airwall collapsed in the fires. It's taken a lot longer than we thought, but it's now a $5 million investment in Isle of Bay. We've also worked with the government to land quite a few of our strategic priorities, being the Hastings Caves and Thermal Springs redevelopment, the Wooden Boat Centre redevelopment there, certainly in those areas. So understanding what your strategic priorities are, I think is really important for us to align that and then go into the MOU to make sure that we can advocate on your behalf to government for those opportunities. So talk a little bit about where we are right now. I won't dwell on what's gone on in the last 18 months. I think you all understand that very clearly. The tourism sector was pretty much closed down for a while. So we'll look at the future for the time being. The reason I've got a picture of the airport up there is that access is much higher than we had expected. Around about 9 months ago, we were forecasting around about 50% of 2019 levels for the last peak season through the summer. We're now sitting at around about, and notwithstanding that we currently have border closures and they'll be rolling up and down, but in general, in May, we went back up to 90% of 2019 levels. But the interesting part there is that what we are attracting in Tasmania, and we always have attracted, is the higher end and the highest spending end of the market. Tasmania's never been a particularly price-driven destination. It's always been on quality and experience. And what we're finding is that the mainlanders that can't travel internationally are choosing to travel overseas to Tasmania and come here and spend their money in the higher end and the higher yielding aspects of that. So access is about 90% of where it was over all markets, not just leisure, but spend is about 132% of what it was before. So yield is up, and we're anecdotally hearing from people who own things like cellar doors, that instead of buying six bottles of wine or a couple of bottles of wine, people are now buying two or three cases of wine and having them shipped back. So places like Sapphire have had the busiest time they've ever had. Port Arthur, the historic site, recorded visitation figures higher than they've ever had, and that was in 2018. So there are aspects of the tourism industry that are going very well, obviously when borders are open. But there are also other aspects and sectors within the tourism industry that are still really struggling, and that's sectors like the independent tour operator or bus owner. Tour business is very difficult. We know that people prefer to be in higher cars at the moment, they prefer to be in control of their own destination. But Tasmania is resonating very strongly with those visitors. They want to come. Demand is very strong. So when borders are opened, the future is looking particularly strong for Tasmania. We've never been hugely exposed to the international market. It was only ever around about 25% of our market. So there is opportunity for us in the domestic market here, and we're not quite as exposed as others. So what strategies are we working under? T21 is the overarching strategy from the government delivered through the Tasmanian government and the Tourism Industry Council of Tasmania. T21 actually stands for the 21st century, which started in 1996 as economists and secretary that it runs out this year. But it was being refreshed, the state of strategy just before COVID hit. That was obviously put on pause, and then it went into a 6-month recovery action plan each 6 months. I'll make sure that Lynn has a copy of that, but you can look it up as a 6-month action plan. And these are the deliverables that we work with the Department of State Growth and Tourism Tasmania, local government areas and industry to deliver those recovery actions. The second major part that we're developing right now is our own Southern Tasmania Destination Management Plan. And we've had two workshops already and multiple stakeholder interviews with the consultants, CRC Tourism, that are delivering this. And we should have the final draft towards the end of this month for delivery around about August. And in here, we'll talk about some of the opportunities that we're putting in there. This destination management plan is about identifying opportunities that can be delivered within the next 4 years, which is quite a short plan, as we do understand it's still a bit of a moving feast. So we'll discuss that a little bit later on. I also supplied, for some of you readings, the Central Highlands Destination Action Plan. And the destination action plans were started in around about 2015. There were 32 of them around the state. Some are still active, some are still not, but it's still very much a useful document for us and the government to fact check investment opportunities and strategic focus for particular regions. It does have a date on the front, but I was interested to have that discussion with you to see if this still rings true with you, because it's certainly a document that's used by government as well. So, some of the opportunities that we know about in the Central Highlands at the moment, we have the Iron Village and Trails Development, the James Shot, which I'm sure you're all aware of. Regional dispersal for us is all about product. The more product there is in the region, the more opportunity there is for people and desire there is for people to visit the region. So that's one of our key focuses, is to try to get new product up and running and developed. Fly fishing, as you know, is obviously a strategic and unique point of difference to the Central Highlands. We work very closely with Tourism Tasmania in what they call their Unordinary Adventures Programme, and this is about packaging by pushing up the marketing to the national and international market when that is available. Agritourism I'll expand a little bit on later, because there's a large federally funded project that's just starting to kick off right now. I think there's opportunity there. Caravan and camping demand. We know that you have assets already in your municipal area to attract caravan and camping. This is a growth area for us as we look at 2023-24 when the new schools will come online. That's going to increase the amount of caravans and campers that are coming our way. So we need to match that with product for them to experience. So that will be a key opportunity for regional dispersal in that area. I don't know if any of you are caravanners, but it's almost impossible to buy a decent caravan at the moment for any sort of a price that was reasonable a couple of years ago. That sort of market is booming at the moment. The second-hand boat sale market, cars, caravans are certainly booming. Australians want to keep themselves self-contained, and there is a growing market there. And leisure for mills as well. So during the pandemic, Senator Daniel landed out of a federal government $1 billion support package for COVID. We landed $13.5 billion for Tasmania, specifically for tourism for COVID recovery. That's the largest slice of money out of all of the states. And we're now working with Tourism Tasmania very closely on projects that have been delivered out of that. Agritourism is one of them. Defence support is another. Business events for mills is the third one. Business events are a key opportunity again, strategic opportunity for Tasmania. And we know that Tasmania can't compete virtually in these events. If an event of scale has an opportunity to bid to come to a state, we always get outgunned in the wallet. But what we also know is that if you get those event organisers into Tasmania, 90% of the time you convert that business. So there's been some money put to business in Tasmania to bring people in to convert that business. And the same thing is happening on the leisure for mills, and there's opportunity in the Central Highlands for that. Whereas Tourism Tasmania and us are bringing in many journalists and influencers and travel agents into the state over the next few months to tour them around, show them what's here, show them what opportunity there is, and that will convert business in the long run. So just before I finish, I'll just touch on agritourism. So this is, as I said, a federally funded project through Austrade. The four RTOs are delivering it with Tourism Tasmania. We've just appointed the consultants who won the tender process for it. And this is about growing the opportunity of agritourism. We know that agritourism has been something that Tasmania has done very well. If you look at the successes, Hilmi Island Cheese, with Karinga Farm, Farm Stays, Celador Experiences, it's been an area of focus of Tasmania for a long time. It's never actually been put together. Boosted and then marketed out to the rest of the country and internationally at the end. It's called opening the gate now, a lovely marketing term. There'll be two streams to this work. The first stream will be about attracting people who have the desire to get into agritourism. That's about business development. It may be multi-generational farmers that are looking to diversify their market. I think again there's probably opportunity in Central Highlands for that. Or it may be on a smaller scale, in places like Kew, people who have hobby farms who want to create a celador experience from their smaller scale, quality visitor experiences. The other side of the project is a masterclass aspect, and that's for those people that have already been in agritourism for a long time and just need to refine their product and have a look at their visitor experience to develop that. So there's certainly opportunity in that one. So it's about existing agritourism operators and agri-producers as well. There's business support, product development, experience curation. And we're right at the beginning of this project. The first project meeting kicks off on Thursday. So we're right here at the beginning of that. They will be running field days around the state in August and September to attract people in who have a desire to get interested in agritourism. And then there'll be an expression of interest process to apply to join the program after. And Major could very clearly tell me to keep it on track. I hope I'll get it a little bit on track. But I'm more excited about the opportunity now to discuss things with you and to see if we believe we've got our strategic priorities aligned with you.
Yes, sir. I made quite a few notes here, too many to discuss right now. Do you have an email address?
Absolutely. Yeah, should you have a business card here? I'll leave this back. I'll leave this back for you. And very simple things that someone has made.
Thanks, sir.
And I think it would be beneficial to invite Alex for our workshop sometime, just to have the time to ask questions and share ideas. It might be on you for the councillors who have got a story to tell. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have I don't know whether this is a lot of question here or not, but the Central Midlands fits uneasily in the
Western Wilds
sits uneasily in the southern in this evening. I mean, I noticed, and like this is not a criticism, it's just an observation. I noticed you said your region goes from Boffy to Cold Bay. You didn't actually say it went from Great Lake to Cold Bay. That, you know, like, that's not criticism, it's just an observation. So, like, when we did the Western Wilds thing, like, very heavily in the Don Valley, very heavily in the West Coast, and very sporadic in the Central High. I don't know what the answer to this stuff is, but...
I'm absolutely happy to address it. I think you're right. And I think for us, the challenge that Central High has asked about the product, well, I believe is that we need to do as much as we possibly can to develop a product for Central High. That's why the agenda of my own village development interests us so much, because that will create regional dispersal. We know that the road is now sealed from the north to the south, but most of the traffic is still going down the Central Highway. But if you have a compelling reason to visit and reason to go through that central area, you're going to create that, that dispersion. It's all about the road. Absolutely. If that's a strategic priority like yours, then it can come on us as well. That can go into the MOU.
Councillor Archer.
Thanks, Mayor. You mentioned that 12% or 200 businesses are based in Delta Valley and Central Highlands. Be specific, how many businesses do you represent in Central Highlands?
In the Central Highlands?
Yeah.
Oh, look, it would be a low number because they're literally...
Well, exactly. And so, now let's not gloss over the 4% thing. What is it? You must have
the exact number of businesses.
Well, or the percentage or...
In the local government area?
Absolutely.
Look, I would say it's 10 to 15.
Out of 2 million.
As members. But don't forget that we represent all businesses in Southern Tasmania. So our member proposition, our member value proposition is put in to generate income to supplement the money we have to spend, which was, of course, quite enough. But it's a very specific value proposition for them. They get, you know, access to these, some of the member discount rates and so on and so forth. But we represent all businesses in Southern Tasmania. So I hear what you're saying. And that goes back to the point that we need to work as hard as we have to develop the product in Central Highlands. If the product isn't there, you could be that we don't have the opportunity to provide them as members. So we need to do everything we can to get it.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Just very quickly. You received criticism that you don't include the Great Lake, but here you're talking about the Maina Village of Trails, which is right on the edge of the Great Lake.
Yeah.
You're probably aware that the hotel up there at Maina, they're talking about a bike track around the lake and so forth. And also at Lake Augusta, the lodge up there is quite impressive, and it's kind of like a midway entry point to the overland track. And I don't know if you've been in touch with those two entities, but they're really good people, and I think there's a lot of opportunity. For that northern part of the Central Highlands.
I do believe that we are looking at, I'm turn optimist, but I do believe we're looking at a growth period for the Central Highlands. I think that will be delivered by these sort of experiences. If you look at Oaklands at the moment, you know, you can see that they're on a strong growth cycle as well. And that's, a lot of that is driven by wine development, which is really the distillery. And off the back of that distillery, we're now seeing that the towns, most of the businesses in the town are filling up, the new businesses open. So one development tends to breed many more. And that's why I think, you know, what we have struggled with in the last sort of 10 years is finding that hook development that's going to spread the desire to develop the area as well.
Well, thank you, Alex.
Thanks
for coming to Council before, and then we'll finish up.
Just one thing, the, in February next year, the Bothwell Bicentenary European Settlement will occur, and it is intended by the council and Mr. Senator to have a large event there. Would you people be able to promote that in some way?
Absolutely. The promotional event is easy, that's fine. It just basically means ATD, Australian Tourism Days and Warehouse, event listing or product listing. That would be sort of no problem. It's all very easy to do. It's a free service in Tasmania. I think what there is also opportunity there is that Events Tasmania's remit has changed slightly during COVID. They used to be all about bringing new money into the state, but they're also now moving Tasmanians around the state. So they have various kinds of opportunities open at the moment for events integration to support events like this to get up off the ground and to develop as well. Yeah. Or we can serve a lot.
Sessions of a taken party, and then individual training, as we talked about training before, So there's 22 courses that have been in place as well as skills. So there's been things like leadership management courses, search more there. So I think it was three.
That made me get over the fan.
Yeah.
So just lead up. I'll forecast this year on the sorry. So there's been 22 individual training courses that I've put in place as well. So there's been things like leadership management courses that I think there's three people from the Central Islands Council have taken part in. There's been Cert 2 hospitality, Cert 2 being one of the business courses. There's been white cards, gaming courses. One of the things that when kids or Honey Point people go to Job Active, and obviously, if there are any employment benefits, some national ones for that, they'll say, well, you need to do an RSA and you need to do your RCG. Well, to be quite honest, your RCG is but because all it is finishing off course, they need to do a gaming course. So we've put about 25 people who have done that RCG, which is the course that you actually do to finish off your course, through that training so that they can actually work in a hotel or something. So we've got gaming facilities. As I said, there's white cards, RSAs, gaming. We've also been able to track down a person that is able to deliver barista training for us. So that can be done remotely. So we've actually run a couple of courses with her. She's had businesses. It is not accredited training, but it's actually upskilling. So they can take four people at a time behind a coffee machine and actually train them up and give them some skills. So that gives some upskilling for people who are currently in work, or those people who are actually looking for work as well. Some of the things that we've done within the school, so in a discussion I've been through, I've spoken with Janelle and basically all the high school principals and their careers advisors, and through a conversation with Kerry Kingston, who's a career advisor at Campania High School, they had some difficulty with white cards where their kids paid $60 to do an online course and then didn't get a reply, didn't get an accreditation, a piece of paper, anything. So I said, okay, we'll certainly fix that. So I looked for some funding to actually get a white course going. There are a couple of organisations you want to know about us. I spoke with Master Builders Association, Master Builders Tasmania, and they just happened to be developing a program that we've been able to roll out to 120 kids around the six high schools in the four council areas. So there's been 11 kids that are about to take part in the program, the Construction Safe program, up here in Bothwell. That'll be on the 26th and the 27th of July, and that'll give them the opportunity to get their white card. So with that accreditation, they can then do work placement on the work site. So, and out of that, what I've also been able to do, and I'll jump into that now, but I've been able to partner up with Paper Brothers to provide some work experience for those people. So they've gone through, they've got their white card, we can now get them into a work experience program, and the other side of that, I've just approached Munster to get some PVD, so to get some work boots for those kids as well. So if it's not straight out to buy them for them, it'll actually be a reduced cost. So once they basically go on the work site, we've then got the correct PVD. One of the other ones that I've been involved in is partnering up with Discovery. So early learning centres, so childcare basically. So they'll actually come out to all the schools and we'll throw it out to Bothwell to take part in those sessions. So they'll have someone from within their organisation come out and talk to the kids about childcare, early learning, what it takes to actually get into a career, what accreditations that you need to give them some idea about the sector. The other one is similar, the disability sector, there's some information sessions that we've actually thrown into the schools as well. Bothwell hasn't taken that one up just yet. The other one that I've done is partnered up with an organisation called NAS National. So they're a national apprenticeship organisation. So you've got NAS National and MEGT, who basically do all the paperwork for apprenticeships and traineeships within Tasmania. So they also provide career planning sessions. So it's sitting kids down and saying, okay, what do you want to do? Let's talk about what careers are available to you. So giving them an idea between the ages of years of year 9 through year 12 on just what's available to them. So they'll sit down with them for a 45-minute sessions, one-on-one, go through and start into a training session for them and give them ideas about what pathways are there, what training they might need to do, to actually get to where they want to go for their dream job. Obviously, Lockie's here to talk to you about his, what he's doing with his shearing, so we're bringing him up and having had a bit of a chat, which is great. It's going to be a big issue, I think, Lockie. You'll be well aware of where it's at. So I've been able to speak to landowners and contractors, AWI, looking at it from our point of view, or from my point of view, it's probably more where we sit or where I sit is actually trying to develop pools of people who want to get into the industry and actually screening them and getting the right people. I'm speaking to a lot of you, speaking to people like Matt Bailey and Ray Edwards and these sorts of people. They basically said, look, we can pick pretty much straight away in the first 10 minutes whether or not people are going to cut it and they come on the farm or they come to the shed. So it's more about us identifying those people or those kids that have grown up on a farm or had some history on a family member's farm, where they've picked up a pair of shears or they've pen sheep or they've driven forward drives, they've got the knowledge, they've got the physical attributes to be able to actually work on a farm and do it successfully and do it for a long time. So at the moment I'm speaking to Colby 47 and WorkSmiths, who are both quite, for want of a better term, working adult states where we can possibly get people who are interested in getting in the industry onto a farm, possibly have a look at some runs and actually see how they go, get involved, get landowners involved, get contractors involved and say, yeah, he'd be great, and then what Lockie's doing actually get them through to the schools and get them trained up, whether it's in wool handling, whether it's in shearing or wool blasting. So that's where we see it really good. Training agreements has been another thing that we've actually looked at. So originally we were aligned to the Trade Training Centre in Bridgewater. Because they're aligned to the Department of Education, the majority of their space is taken up training students. We're limited to tutors, and they've also got an industrial kitchen there which we can't actually use, not everywhere for a lot of us, unfortunately. So we've had to look at other areas, and one of those venues that we've been able to identify as Rappo Farm. So you've got the atrium out the back there, and we sat down with Jeff and Miriam, and they're very, very keen to use that. So we'll obviously do that at a cost, but it gives us the opportunity to get training actually out into the area rather than always keeping down in the metropolitan areas. The other thing that I've done, and I also have quite thankfully, I have a girl that helps me now 2 days a week, so 15 hours a week. She's actually developed a database of businesses in the four council areas. So there's about 650 business names that she has, and that gives us the opportunity to market or give them information about what we're actually doing. So what employment opportunities are available, what training courses are available, gives them the opportunity to contact us. It could be that we have come across someone that has just moved to the area, that's contacted us with certain skills that we think might actually fit an individual business, and we can go out to the business and contact them and say, hey, look, we've got this person, they want a good view, would you be interested in having a chat? And that seems to work really well. To be able to fly to what they call reverse marketing, people that we come across and then put them into the businesses. IR and HR assistance has been something that I've identified, they call it now reported relations, is something I've identified that's probably lacking in the regional areas, and there's been some small businesses and some agricultural, viticultural businesses that probably don't follow the correct legislation in regards to onboarding staff, underpayment, fair work statements, these sorts of things. So I've actually got someone in my back pocket, and I've done this in Hamilton for a small business and provided them with that link so they can sit down with that person and understand exactly where they are, especially this particular business needed to put a person off, so they needed to go through the right steps and avoid an unfair dismissal. So, and I'll get to this in a moment, but part of some government assistance that we're about to get could actually provide that service. So it could come out of scrap growth, so it's available to those small businesses so that they are covered off and they don't end up in front of Fair Work. But what it also does, it gives us the opportunity to make sure that all those businesses are doing the right thing, so they are looking after their staff, especially their new staff. So it is a big issue out there. One thing I'm not 100% sure, there hasn't been anybody from this area, but that I'm aware of at the moment, I've partnered up with the Brave Foundation. So the Brave Foundation is an organisation which was initially formed by a lady called Bernadette Black, who had a child about the age of 16. Now, she didn't have any support on the way through, so she's been able to get a lot of state funding. It's now extended through onto the mainland as well. But she has case workers who will actually sit down with young mothers with children under the age of 6 and give them, I guess, connections and support raising the kids as well as trying to get them into work. So I've sat down with a couple of their clients in the Dermot Valley area. And it's a similar sort of situation, as I've said before, with the transition of work, where you try and give them options, look at what skills they do have, which in some instances is very, very limited, but give them options and try and connect them with businesses and give them some experience. And I did listen to Alex before, and he spoke about the hospitality industry, and there has been a lot in the media recently that there are not a lot of people out there that want to get into it. I'm finding exactly the opposite, where there are a lot of people that have RSAs and want to get into that industry, but it's like the wine industry, it's pretty much everything. Hospitality, need experienced people in there, so they give a good service, so they get repeat customers. So it is difficult to find experienced people to get in, but there is a lot of people that want the opportunity, so it's really, my job is to try and give them that opportunity, try and open those doors, so that they can actually get through there and start getting a little bit of that one, which is good. The other one which I'm really hoping we can get off the ground, I've also formed part of a network in the Australian, the Garden Council of Australia. They've just picked up some federal funding to be able to establish a program in schools to get kids into horticulture and agriculture. So we're trying to develop a program at the moment where we can start that at year 6. And that could be the Garden Club of Australia with botanical gardens, 24 carats. So those of you who are aware of the 24 carat programs, Kevin Alexander Gardens. So it's a program where kids from year 6 to year 3 and year 6 basically grow projects around the school and then actually take it into a kitchen and they put it into meals. So it's giving them those knife skills, food preparation, cooking, all the way through to year 6. And that would be something we'd actually like to put in the program. So it's about $420,000 that she's received. And part of that also was fighting for her, there might be an opportunity that we could also bring that into the shearing area as well. She's really excited about that because initially it's revolving around horticulture. There's a few hoops that we need to jump through. But there's a lot of balls in the air there that could be really exciting. You can start a program at year 3, go through to year 6, send that through to year 12, and then the transition to work outside that, especially in the point of view as well.
And you're probably aware of the DFEA running a similar program for that. I think it's being to farms to kids or kids to farms, something like that. And yeah. that's a year 3 or 6 program. It's doing similar to what you're saying, but broad agricultural things. They haven't got an approach in there a couple of months ago. They haven't incorporated some shearing thing, but that would work in my work.
Is that federal?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So we can talk about that later. Thanks, my dear.
So I've got the state election, the last state election. So out of that, there was a pledge of $1.6 million to establish employment hubs around the state. So this has all become, I guess, because we've been successful in this and the successfulness of a similar project in the southeast. So you may be aware of CERTA. A guy called Andrew Hyatt basically started doing what I'm doing by himself. He now has 5 or 6 staff working for him down there in Sorrel. He has a hub, so they're basically doing what we're doing on a larger scale in larger programs. So out of the successfulness of that, the state government has pledged $1.6 million to our project, one to be established in Millville, one to be established in Burnie, and and there's also a similar program in Milwaukee, and one in Bellway, and one in Great Bay Council as well at the moment. So this will pretty much give us the opportunity to become more professional, roll out more services, speak to more businesses, assisting more people. And a couple of things that are add-ons for that as well. So there's $20 million that they've actually pledged as add-ons to that $1.6 million. So one of those will be a CRM, so a client resource manager, which is basically a massive database, including the opportunity to register with us through a website, automatically upload all their information, provide their skills, CVs, and then we basically run reports and then find the people we need for this. This is be fairly powerful. Transport's the other thing. One of the things that we identified fairly early was transport within the four council regions, which is limited. There will be a bus that will be provided to us through our project, which will give us the opportunity to run a service which can get people training, which can also get people to work if they need to, especially in the seasons like fruit picking, where that has been an issue in the past, that will actually alleviate that.
You need lots of buses though, wouldn't you? Like, let's say, Lockie's got a shearing school, or we've got several learners around the place, but some live in Bothell, some live in Lou, some live in Howard. They've got to get the different.
Yeah, it'll make our house a nice neighbourhood, and we wouldn't be picking people up out of Howard, unfortunately.
Well, they have written what it would be. It's complicated to have a bus to capture all that sort of thing.
Part of that service is that you have works and they'll be booking. And one of the add-ons to that as well is to provide, give them the ability to catch a cab, pay for that cab so they can get the rhythm in a couple of months. So there'll be some feeding stages in the initial stages of the program. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But Andrew's been running that program in the southeast for a while, so he actually got that up and running and applied for it. Running through the Community Transport Service Tasmania through Area Connect, and it's been able to coordinate that quite well. So, there'll be a large budget for training also, which will be great. And as I said before, it'll give us the opportunity to join the staff and all of a sudden move out to the council chambers of Conflict. No council chambers out there, so we'll refurbish that to give us more space. We also, at the moment, have a Facebook page where people can register and we actually advertise roles which we've got up. A website will be launched next week. We're about to rebrand as well, so we're down at this OSCS at the moment will become the South Central Workforce Network. And we've got a new logo for that as well. One of the things that I have, one of the things that I have also identified is the lack of accommodation within, I guess, Southern Midlands and probably Central Highlands Council areas. I've got someone, two consultants at Repo Farm at the moment who are looking for accommodation. So if any of you know of someone who may have accommodation, they actually have to move off the property at the moment. So I've been doing some work with them. We've been able to put six candidates in there because they've been very lucky at the moment in their own works that they've been able to operate with staff or family and friends. They're about to grow. Their audience with weddings and events and those sorts of things, most borders open, will get bigger and bigger, so they're looking to increase in their operation. So the two consultants that have got living there at the moment need to move out the accommodation to make room for guests. So if any of you know of anybody that's got some accommodation somewhere at house, I'd like to know that, or they'd like to know that, so they can move in. Their next option, they've got a daughter down in Dover, they don't really want to be travelling from Dover to Bothell every day. That's their only option. Just lastly, I'll leave you in cards here. Please, if you come across anybody in the council area that needs any assistance, whether it's job seekers, whether it's businesses that are looking for, whether there's any training that needs to be done, can you please let me know? Either text me, give me a call, or send me an email, and I'll come up and have a chat and see what we can do.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
employers in Tasmania developed Hancock, which I'm assuming is sort of agricultural specific white car.
Yep.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, that's just been released.
Yeah, so we were having a presentation on that for a month or so ago.
Yep.
So,
what
do
you think?
Yeah, pretty good. So Claire, the girl who's running it, she done it up in Slovakia and sort of developed some ideas out of that. And, well, there's such a sparsity of, I think this is the word, of applicants for agricultural jobs that anything's worth trying. But the concept's good, and I think it just expands on that white card concept a bit more than agricultural focus. But anyway, that was my main thing. If you're aware of that, and I mean, I can get you a bit of detail if you want it, but you'll be able to get it enough.
I'm actually catching up on Test Lake on Thursday.
Sorry?
I'm catching up on Test Lake on Thursday. We're going to bring that
I'd have to go back to it. Yeah. Timing for the Tasmania.
Yeah. So I don't know whether the RSC will be training on behalf of Tasmania.
That's another angle, isn't it?
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah.
In regards to that, I've been working with Claire on that. She's wanting to introduce a shearing component, like a shearing industry component I've actually put her in contact for a meeting next week or the week after with one of the main figures at AWI and the Shearing Contractors Association of Australia. And they love the idea of it and want to make it a national white card type.
Yeah, I've got the impression they just want to road test it in Tassie first.
It is, and I think she's just been very well received from the people. I can't remember the figures of how many people she's actually put through, but it's quite a few.
Thank you.
Councillor
Cassidy, and
then we'll introduce. Sir, a couple of ideas that I have for you. I've seen some young folk around Bothell, for example, using chainsaws, but not wearing hearing protection or eye protection and so forth. So I think it would be a good idea if you could possibly have a course for chainsaw use and so forth for young people, maybe in high school, starting in high school. And also, I would say, farmers are probably having a hard time getting staff like to drive tractors and harvesters and so forth. So maybe you could have a training course to teach them how to drive harvesters and tractors and farm type of equipment.
That's what the ag card. That's what the ag card
is. Yeah, it does have that design. Yeah, most definitely. I did connect a couple of landowners up just before Christmas last year with some RTOs, so some training organisations to actually do that. And that's what we can do. So we're not like people running a program, but we can actually direct people to a program that's already taking place, so it doesn't come under our banner. But say for instance if you wanted to run a specific course for skill set and crutching or whatever it might be, we can actually transition through rather than us actually doing it.
Okay. We'll introduce, thank you very much, Anthony.
We'll introduce. I do have to talk about, so I need to share off, so I do apologize.
Thank you.
Hello everyone, my name's Lockie. I think Jim?
Yeah,
so I've been speaking with Jim on the phone, I just met you, so I recognise the voice, so Jim invited me along. I'm working for primary employers in Tasmania, they're based in Lonnie.
Oh, right, these are the agriculture.
Yeah, so I'm working for them part-time and managing a project which is called the Workforce Development Project, and it's only focused on the shearing industry statewide, but I'm trying to do, I'll give you a bit of an idea of what we're doing with the project. So there's been a grant of around $250,000, a bit less than that, that's been allocated towards this project, and it's targeting the recruitment, the training and retention of shearers and shearing related jobs in the state. And what I've been doing the job since early March, and what I've been doing initially is actually trying to discern what the issues are before we try and do anything. So one of the big issues was how the training programs were being run here. So they were, the trainers themselves were fine, but there was very much a lack of structure in how the actual programs were conducted. So what we've done is we've moved away from a, what's called a non-competency-based model that was ran by AWI, so that, and then moved to a competency-based model through the Shearing Contractors Association of Australia. So they conduct all the training in South Australia and Victoria. So now they're also doing it here just for schools. So we've got running this week up in Fingal. And the key benefit of them, having them running under their banner, is the students that finish the school end up with competencies in, say, animal welfare, first aid, and of course, shearing and crutching related ones. And that opens the door to give us government funding ongoing into the future, so we can provide more schools. They're actually cheaper than the way we used to run them, and there's a higher trainer to student ratio. So the students are getting more time to work with them, it's costing us less to run them, and we can have more schools. So I'm determining at the moment what the appropriate amount of, like a training season that I'd call it, how many schools we actually need to service. We need only roughly, in terms of shearers, maybe 10 a year. Like if we had 10 good shearers coming through the schools and coming on each year, that would be enough to keep up with what we need here. But in order to do that, we've got around, we need, there's about a 30% retention rate in terms of people you get through the schools that will actually come out of the school and stay in the industry. So for the school I'm running at the moment, I have 30 people applying, and I've picked 10, so the top 10 out of those, to go to the school. And then we expect out of that 10, we'll get 3 or 4 that will actually stay in the industry. And that's their figures that are quite good for how, if you would compare it to Victoria and South Australia, we've been running this model for a long time. That's about right. You get a few more sometimes, but if you're getting 30 to 40% coming out of the schools, that's as good as we can hope for at the moment. So that was one key thing I've looked at. The other key thing, the other really main thing, is trying to get the recruitment sorted out. So my idea has been to get into more into schools and to organisations like Anthony was just talking about, to expose people to the industry and show, without having them to commit to going, working for someone or doing a full week school, we're developing a program to get around to high schools and other places to do an introductory talk, like say half an hour description of what it's like, gathering the people who are interested and taking them out to just a one day workshop to give them just a very general idea of what's going on. We don't, one of those in Bothell, maybe a month or so ago. So that was good. We had some Bothell school come out, and I think year 9, 10 kids, we had maybe 12 or so come in. And yeah, they seemed to really enjoy it. Then they went up to the Campbelltown show and competed in one of the like, school kids' events that they had there. Yeah, we've done that with several schools around the state, and they were coming there. And we're really, really good. So that's something that we're trying to do. We want to get around to more schools and expose the industry to them, to a lot of people who haven't considered it as a job, and yeah, trying to attract good new young people. So at the moment, my project can fund all these pilot things we're doing, so I'm testing everything out, seeing what works and what doesn't. But what I'm putting a focus on for everything that I'm doing is trying to make it sustainable going into the future. So that's why we've, like I said, with the schools that I've changed to the Contractors Association, we'll be able to apply for grants through Skills Tasmania on the competitive grant scheme going beyond the middle of next year when my project's finished. So we can then get get the funding for those schools through Tasmanian government funding. And we still have the funding of AWI, Australian Law Innovation. We'll have the funding from them to conduct all their in-shed training, so the on-site stuff that's happening throughout the state. But this being such a big sheep area around here, I really want to make sure I'm heavily involved around here to make sure this region is not missing out.
Have you talked to anyone that's put in Aura?
I was at the Oaklands.
Oaklands that way,
didn't you? I was at the Oaklands, was just talking about Glenora. I was at the Oaklands Festival, was it a week or two ago? They had an ag festival at the school there. And I spoke with several teachers from several different schools who come around, and I was told about Glenora a couple of times. So yeah, that's the thing. We wanted to get to those places and put our programs in there. So our programs are nearly ready to actually to be put out there, but that's what we're doing at the moment is development. Today I just wanted to make everyone aware that we are doing, that's what I'm planning on doing. And if anyone has any ideas or questions or anything, please ask. I don't want to keep going on for too long, but I'll ask them to answer anything that anyone has
to teach.
Yep.
Thinking about things that happen in the future, we have a November weekend bush festival in the Melbourne community every month. Yeah. We used to have shearing crops, we don't know where we are with that at the moment.
Yep.
But wouldn't it be an avenue for you to have some juniors give a shearing crop display or something or whatever?
Yeah, we can definitely organise. If that's something that you'd like to see.
I think that would be great for a beginner for the young people.
Yeah.
And a big draw card.
Yeah, well, did anyone go to the candy camp show? Yeah, so the shearing really drew a big crowd of people.
Yeah,
well,
we always have
to
do a shearing
box,
and I think that would be.
It's the Hamilton show, and I think that's running again. That's part of their points based circuit they have around Australia.
It is, yeah,
so it's not cheap as that, but I don't know whether there's an opportunity there for. You at least have a display or something like that.
Okay, well, I can be with sports here, so they have a bit of sort of equipment, and I can make a bit of an
Katrina from Council to contact you on this. Councillor Archer.
I'd just like to congratulate you on your taking a fresh approach to this. All our shearing team knocked off today at the Campbelltown Sheep Show. Now, that's never happened in my life before.
Yep.
There's a whole change of culture amongst young shearers and shed hands now, which I think is very, very good.
Yep.
And the system that's been in place has failed. It hasn't worked. Now we've got a critical shortage of good shearers.
Yep.
And so I think, starting from scratch is known to be a positive thing because the old model wasn't working. But as an aside, we had a staff member who used shearing tables. She was employing people to come in and use shearing tables. She had Sudanese people come in on the six tables she was using, and they became so confident after several weeks they went to the shearing school and became professional shearers.
Yeah.
And so I think we're often targeting the wrong people. We need to be looking at micro communities and offering an indication. We've had a young fellow working for us 29 days, $24,000.
Yep.
And that's a lot of dough. And sort of as a high income industry rather than just hard work, which it is.
Yep.
And I think amongst micro communities, hard work doesn't worry. And I think that's an opportunity we're missing.
Yeah, we have. And that's one of the key reasons why I want to get work with people like, say, Anthony, who's got access to those groups of people, and expose them just to an introductory day or 2 days so they can decide whether that's something they actually like. And then, because actually, training is very expensive for this union industry based on we need a high number of trainers per student so we can actually train. It's not like, that's why TAFE doesn't like our model, which has been done in the past. They like teaching hairdressers to one teacher to teach 30 people at the same time, whereas we need 3 trainers to teach 10 people. So all of the programs that were run through TAFE in the past are off scope now based on not enough people signing up to them for starting, the people who were signing up to them but not completing, and obviously costing them a lot of money and they're getting nothing in return. You can see what they do, and
I'd like to ask you, do you have any idea how many shears are lost every year? Like how many resign, retire, quit?
I sent out and received back surveys from the contractors across the state. So I found out there was, to my surprise, there's 24 contractors and organisers in the state that I could track down. Of them, only 10 of them were willing to actually fill out my surveys. But from those 10, accounted for about 80% of the sheep in the state. So we've got the bulk of, so there's 10 contractors doing the bulk of the work. And it's very hard to determine an actual number from that, but there is a high age population. Like there's a lot of people that are 50 plus in the industry, and there's not many people in the younger bracket that are coming in, but no, it's very hard to determine actual numbers. But what we do know is based on South Australia, Victoria, New South Wales, we do have more data that, yeah, you, we can work out that you need around 10 to 30 years to replenish what we're losing.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
That 10, because I was thinking that probably one good ship would take 10 shears.
Thanks, I'll put it in sense. It's really great to hear the fresh approach and the schools, and I think the more country schools, especially, not to say city schools wouldn't be interested, but the more schools you can get around and encourage young people to go. And then the other thing is to minimise the amount of forms and things like that everyone has to fill in, so that doesn't discourage people as well.
And
good luck.
So the competency-based stuff we do, like I say, on the forms, we do limit the amount. You don't have to be highly academic to be able to get through the competency-based bits of the course. Yeah, so it's quite easy to get through. It's still mostly practical-based. Because in reality, though, those qualifications they get mean very little to their employers. So it's more, the formality is more there for us to generate income from the government to continue to run the schools. Well, I would hope in the future that those qualifications are important. But they should be, but two employers, they're not at the moment. No, I was a shearer for a long time. I travelled all over the world doing it. I never once was asked anything about whether I had any qualifications. I could, you bring up a contractor in Queensland or whatever, you ask you how many you can and you say, I'll see you on Tuesday, and then you're going to turn up. And become apparent when you got there whether you can do it or not. And that's how it works.
We'll finish off now with Council.
Yeah. Regarding retention, so I think I might discuss this a bit review, but where the learner is May, and he's coming back in the fortnight,
yep.
But he went through the school at Oakland in February, and I think he said 12. Went through and done 2 years of school here. So that's worse for you.
It was close to 20, actually.
Oh, well. talking to become apparent, there's very little backup. So I don't know whether your funding allows you to, let's say, go around, you know where the learners are for, let's say, the first year or 6 months, and say, you turn up at Smoko at lunchtime, because these fellas are in a shed, and if no one wants to mentor them, and the farmer can't say, well, I can help you see grind your gear, because they don't even know how to grind it themselves. So, like, unless one of the other, let's say, professional shearers can, like, talk to him and help him grind his gear, he's just left. That was.
So from these schools, I've developed backup stuff, so I haven't been able to use it yet because we haven't finished the first new approach of the schools. So yeah, I plan on having check-up, like check-ins with the people, the, everyone that's been to the schools, and then that'll actually give us some real data on what the actual retention rate is, rather than our guess under around 30% based on the other states.
Yeah.
And using that information, with me being able to keep in touch with everyone, I can then contact the trainers, like Matthew Hayden in Boston, to say we have, you know, such and such is out.
Yeah, he might turn up at Smogo, yeah, help him grind his gear,
yeah,
and give him a bit of support. So I think that would work. I think that would be better than just leaving them.
Yeah. And there is several other things that I've talked about that I don't remember. If anyone wants to talk about anything else related, curious related, I'm happy to come back and do an actual proper
demonstration.
Yeah. Are you like to see demonstrations? Well, one thing I'll just mention quickly is CET have partnered with Safe Farming Tasmania, and we're running a series of shearing shed safety sessions across the state. So it's just talking about shed safety issues and work safety issues from the point of the actual physical stuff around and from the point of what workers' compensation claims and insurance and all those background type of things associated with the industry. So we haven't actually sent the invitations out for those, but there'll be one of them will be around Lovely Banks for anyone around this area. And the other
and could you run one at Bush Fest on Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, I can definitely talk to and is that in late November?
It's November about the third weekend in Bushel Twist.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely say I can't see that that would be an issue. Is it like
to say that? Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Doctor. We do have to cut that short now.
No, no.
And thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Dr. Lieberman. I'll leave some cards over here, and please contact me about
anything. Thank you. All right, we'll move on now to our deputations. Our 7:41 is public question time. Ron, you've been very patient back there. Would you like to speak in our public question time?
Thank you very much, Mayor. Just on a lot of subjects that you had to deal with this morning already. I just was on behalf of the parish of Hamilton. You might be aware that significant work was conducted at St Mary's Church Cemetery at Gretnam recently. All of the graves have been restored, all of the headstones have been lifted and reset, two of the monuments have been lifted and repaired and reset and straightened. Briars and hawthorns have been removed from the cemetery grounds, and the whole place looks white, really nice. We've had some really good feedback from the members of the public and people who come to visit the graves on how it's been done. Now that was facilitated in large part by council, who delivered three lots of gravel. Was assisted by a machine from Bloomfield and from Wolfpack come over and helped us do the funding line of work and the heavy lifting. So I'd just like to thank Council very much for facilitating the work done in Gretnam and its ongoing witnessing and lawn mowing of all of the cemeteries in the parish. And Parish Council asked me to express their gratitude towards the Council for the work and facilitation they've done, so thank you very much indeed. On the second matter, is of the Pelham Road. As you're aware, that significant works have been done on the Pelham Road from the tier up to the top and ongoing. Council obviously selected the tenders, and I congratulate you on the tenders that you, of the work that the tenders have done. Really outstanding job, and the local feedback has been through the roof, of course, and quite a few past survivors spoken to. Really appreciate the work that's been done. I think the standard of the road work that's been done on the Pelham Road is just over and above anything that's been done that I've seen around in the Southern Tasmania Council by council workers. Once again, thank you very much, Council.
Well, thank you so much, Ron, because it's really nice for Council to have some positive feedback, and we really do appreciate it.
Can I just ask Ron, I'd like to think, and I think the council should, if I've got this right, from a donation from a member of your family, the Anglican Church up here in Arbutus, have its lights on all night.
St Peter's
has been pretty much restored for donations from lots of people, including the All Right family, I might acknowledge, from the floor, the roof, the walls, public lighting, and
but the lighting and keeping that on, keeping the lights open, it makes a good spectacle for Hamilton. It's a great spectacle having those lights on all the time. I thought that was from a donation from Oliver.
Somebody had installed the lights from.
Yeah, well, that was
some government about 30 years ago. Yeah. I'm not too sure the details, but that was to highlight the San Antonio Church for tourism. But since then, those lights have had to, including the underground cars, had to come up, and we've done it from our own donations, and put all the old electric cars up, reinstalled new lights, and got the lights back onto display.
No, anyway, it's a good spectacle for Hamilton. It's a good welcome, especially in the winter time, at night time.
It's really worth
it. It's a great spectacle.
It was great.
Thank you so much, Ron.
Thanks,
Ron.
Thank you. Okay, Mayor of the Midlands, Councillor Gibbons, and then we have the Scott report, and we have item 2, General Manager's Commitment, item 43, the General Manager's Commitment. 9 is notification of Council Workshop's Bill. 9 future workshops will be joining the Motion of Vice Engineer and Possible Work Group. Workforce group to meet on four floors of the town hall. 10 is mayoral announcements. You would have had the federal government back coming to our recovery grant program and sent to all councillors, and that will be discussed in 17.13. 11, we go on to our minutes. 11.1, received a draft in the ordinary meeting held on the 15th of June. I have a mover, please. Those for any against, that is carried. Confirmation, the 11.2 confirmation of minutes of the Open Council meeting on Council member on the 15th of June. Mover, please. Councillor Bowden, second. Councillor Honour. Those for and against, carried. Receive the draft minutes of the Lockwood Cemetery Committee meeting. I have a mover. Councillor Honour, second, please. Councillor Ford, those four, against, carried. 11.4 is the draft minutes of the Senior Arms Visitor Centre Management Committee, Captain shop, trucks and vehicles, etc. So I went to see the local police and make him aware of what the injury is, but his vehicle's there, but I couldn't actually get him to answer the door, so I left him a message and his news group left him up. So I think it's important that we do write to our local policeman and just to inform him that there are concerned residents about the speed of the vehicles going past the shop. And now it's a barbecue area and public amenities. I think it's important that that gets brought to the TAF police.
So, maybe we were here to write a letter to
I think it would be nice to write a letter just to keep,
So,
and we are, we're addressing it's a safety concern.
Do you need a motion for that or just do it on your own?
Pardon?
Do you need a motion for that or just do it on your own?
I think a motion would be best.
So,
I'll have a motion that
I'll say
write a letter to Taz Police.
Yeah.
About the Bronte Park.
Okay. Moved by Councillor Cassidy, second by Councillor Bailey. Those for that motion? Is there anyone opposed to that motion? Thank you, that is carried. Right now, over to you, Mr. Graham or Damien.
15.1 first, which was that boundary adjustment in Marriott Road, was that civil one? The boundary adjustment basically brings in that small parcel of land we were talking about. That was put through that planning one with just basically recommendation that would be passed just with
those recommendations of the planning.
Nice simple one.
Councillor
Lawler,
do you have the recommendation?
Right, I'll move the recommendation planning.
With option one, is it, Councillor?
Option one, that's what the recommendation
is. Yes, it is. So it's moved by Councillor Lawler, second. Councillor Cassidy. Those four. Again. Next
Can I ask, are you going to stay for a while? Or can I ask Ryan a question? Is there a way, like a blue tank that you in park, I've already one person knowing about it, so is there a way we could have a default to a more neutral colour on some of these tanks that are in public places? The blue one, I don't think it's worth doing anything about it, but I'll just...
Can you just give
like
that
a green one?
It's not an agenda
item. No, I know, but...
Well, it's certainly there in place.
No, I know, it's not worth doing anything about it, but...
It was basically to match the blue toilets that are going in. So we're going to have a blue toilets too. They're exactly the same as what's at
Oops.
And
at... Yeah, well, I know, but it seems out of place. This is what the bloke reckons. I mean, one person comment. I just thought it would have been more of a neutral colour.
What is a neutral?
gum tree, bush green.
Over to you, Dan.
Anyway, just move on there. I might have just a comment that...
Well, it's there, and it'll be...
Well, I'll let one person know about it.
We'll
do
that.
Sorry, Dan.
Sorry, back to you.
Thank you, Mayor. So, just remember, I'm very grateful for you, and we all considered this matter at the planning meeting last week. But after basically 2 years of backwards and forwards with the Planning Commission, we're now at a point where the Commission have issued their formal notice to Council to say modify the draft local provision schedule that we submitted 18 months ago in this way, and then resubmit it for a final check to the commission, and then if they're happy with the modifications, then they will give the okay for it to go out to the public consultation process. So in the last 2 years, all we've been doing is working through a process to get to the point where we can put the official draft out for public consultation. And because it's a formal notice under the Act, there's no real way to debate anymore with the Commission about the form of it. We must modify it as they've directed and then get it out for public consultation. The main thing is the supporting report. That's where Council is able to explain itself, and not only how we come up with the draft LPS, but now it's where we can explain the areas where we haven't been able to agree with the Planning Commission. They've basically required us to modify the draft in a way that perhaps we can see that. So since the Planning Committee meeting last week, I've basically tried to produce a modified version of the supporting report, which only got to Council yesterday, and I believe was sent in the drop boxes to the councillors yesterday. And you'll see that the supporting report is modified by way of having the track changes highlighted, and that is because the Commissioner said we want to see the modified supporting report with track changes highlighted. So they want to be able to see how it's been modified since the one we officially submitted 18 months ago with that. So there does remain probably about five broad categories or areas, things, that we are not in line with the views of the TPC, or their views don't match with ours. So that's been my job to try and put Council's opinion so that when it's all out of public comment, the public can see the draft local revision schedule, and if they take the time to read the supporting report, they can see those parts of that draft LPS where Council's view was different to what's been required to be put into the draft.
And thank you, Damien, for getting that done so quickly. It was a bit of pressure, I imagine. But I'll put forward the recommendation, and it's one, Section 35 of the Notice of Issue of Bodies, that's named Planning Division, dated 23rd June 2021, they received, and two, Cameron endorsed the changes to the supporting report as detailed. Mark, I don't know who it was.
You came up with all the changes that were a good idea for the council, which was great, and then they said go away and do it exactly how we say, and we're all understanding that, which to me is wrong. They're dictating to us what has to be done, and we have no choice. As a council, we're just agreeing to do whatever they want.
On quite a number of fronts, they ended up agreeing with what we were saying, but as I said, on those probably five broad areas of things, they didn't agree, but that's the value of the supporting report. Now, they have said to me, the supporting report is Council's report. In other words, Council can say in it what we want. So I will be interested to see how our supporting report is received by them and whether they try and interfere with what we're saying on that. I think that would be the crucial time if they do want to if they start dictating what we say in the supporting report to somehow get rid of the opposing views of council to them. That would be of concern. So I think by council endorsing the supporting report as we've changed it, so it clearly is now saying council's view is contrary to the commission on this and that and that and that, then we can, I think the democratic process is preserved, that we can show what council's view is. And also bear in mind the next stage after the public consultation, we'll be able to see if members of the community basically agree with council's view, on those issues, and we will be able to have another chance, or the main chance really, to say to the Commission, it's been out for public comment as a draft, we've received the community's comments, we now definitely believe that this should be changed that way, and that should be changed that way, or you know, whatever we come up with in that process of determination.
Can I say no?
Yeah, we can't say no, basically.
No.
At this point.
And for information, local government emergency news regulations 2015 is a completed two. A councillor at a council meeting may speak once to a motion at any time after the motion has been moved and said. That's what I was trying to say for you, councillor. Councillor,
not a second, it's not a court, ma'am. It's a way of clarification, not court.
This is the local.
Yeah, that's right, but it says move second, but not court.
Thank you. Councillor Cassidy and then Laura.
So, Scott, you know, Damien brings out a very good point. I think the time that you'll have to object to this, if you can help get the public to give their input, that would be the time to do it. Time to put pressure on is getting as much public interest in our local planning, seeing the changes that are proposed and the council's supporting report, that's what I'm saying. That would be the time.
And the document that you've prepared, Damien, I presume, will basically give councillors lead as to how we should indicate to ratepayers why we are displeased, I imagine.
I really hope, and my job is to not only guide councillors, but also to receive the council's input, so hopefully the supporting report is reflective of what the council's view is of these issues.
I think we put a lot of work into it. You have that job.
Yeah.
And you've done a good job.
Well, and councillors, I mean, we've done quite a few workshops over the last 2 years, so we've definitely considered the issues properly,
obviously.
I think there's a discussion captured what I want to bring up. So essentially, I see the role. It's not a role of it's not a rubber stamping. It's just the next step in the process. The next step is to get public feedback, and there's an opportunity to get the local government people to say, well, okay. Yeah, you know, I'll surrender on this.
It's not the
whether that can work or not, I don't know, but at the end of the day. So, anyway, the discussion captured that from the hour.
Councillor Ford.
Being as the majority of the population are heading towards changes like this until it's all been done and dusted, if certain members, and I'm talking a few people, send in submissions regarding their disagreement with the way that it's set up. They agree with the way that the council sees these particular items and areas. If there are only a few of them, is it likely that the head honchos are going to say, there's only a few of them, don't worry about it?
I think the number of people that hold a particular view is... It definitely counts, but it should not be counting it as much as what they actually say in the process. If what they actually say, you know, is meaningful and, you know, can ultimately be shown to be, for example, in line with the overall objectives of the planning system as defined in the Act. You know, that's
the problem. The problem with that, though, is that if you say five people put a submission in, disagreeing with the way that the policy is set up, the people might turn and say, well, I've only five of them and there's 2,500 ratepayers up there, there's not way about it. That's my point. It concerns me that they could just say, no, there's only five, don't worry about it. Yeah, and that's wrong.
In our case, we can lobby, though, can't we? We can ring around people and hassle them. Carries them to be interested.
Okay, well, the recommendation is moved by Councillor Owen, seconded by Councillor Cassidy, and Against, still, Councillor Bowman?
I'm still against, I'm not happy with the way we're being bullied by the
committee. So you're against, so we'll record those names, four against. Thank you. 15.3, Vice President of the Committee, 2 of 7 members. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doug.
A move, please. Councillor Connor, seconder. Seconder, Councillor Cassidy, Ward.
Well, these names here were actually given by the developer. So those three there, obviously, with what Cathy has looked at Travellers Rest, where there is already Wilderness Way, so you can count that one out.
Okay.
So that only leaves those two, but in saying that, it's up to the council whether we want to put in some other names. These ones here are only just putting more of the developer. If they're not suitable, there can be some other names that actually go to the Tasmanian Navy.
Recently.
I think there's some rules, if I can start in there. I think there's some rules around Indigenous or dual naming around, like it's got to be recognised as, so that,
this, yeah, yeah.
There's got to be recognised in the Indigenous language that that name is that place, but I'm not confident that your suggestions would meet those that by
it does. I'll research it. I do have proof of that. For your information, one of the members had passed down on 9 and 10, Ernest Westlake reported that Aboriginals and white people, one of the phrases remembered from the 20th century, matched with older records of the languages. So it's all been researched and it is in writing that's been involved.
So is Arthur's Lake, the area of Arthur's Lake have Indigenous word?
Indigenous?
No, or the area of where Arthur's Lake is.
Well, if you say lake, you take the word lake, that's what I did, and you take bush, it's a bush lake. So that's what the word in my name is.
Good luck.
I opened it up.
So what's that in the word? Or like the study or specific places.
Yeah, see, they wouldn't allow.
Great locals,
yeah, but they wouldn't.
I won't attend Charlie.
Yeah, yeah, but well, they were under different rules, but they wouldn't allow Hobart to be renamed because Hobart didn't exist. There's no sort of thing. So, good luck on an Indigenous name, I'm thinking, but I'll just go for the developers.
Grandmother, is it me to raise it, plus?
Sorry? Correct. Along just past Davis, okay. In between Davis's and
the original name for that area is Tea Tree Bar. Yeah. So...
Okay.
It should have something to do with that. It's not wilderness there.
if I can, through the chair, maybe we forget about the recommendation at the minute and defer it, and we maybe put it back out to councillors for, I'll talk with Cathy about how we go about maybe a few more names, and then we'll come back again. I mean, there's no rush for it at the moment. This is just what the developers put in, and we can work with the developer and just say, well, at this time, We've got a few other names coming, and they may agree to those names as well.
Mm.
Maybe we just defer this at the time being.
Mayor, I think I missed the discussion on the cemetery committee. Did we actually have that? Did we skip over the cemetery committee? Did we jump over the cemetery committee?
Just the terms
of reference. Yes, I couldn't see the change. It had terms of reference listed, Mayor, but I didn't know what the changes were. It just said these are the terms of reference. The attachment shows the terms of reference document. It doesn't say this is what's been changed. It just gives you the new terms of reference. Or did I misread
that? There would have been references to the legislation if they didn't change.
Yeah,
for sure.
Has it?
Yeah, not putting anything in front of us. So this was the second part of the role and purpose or the agenda items, was that
the... But I encourage anyone who wants to join and come along to the cemetery committee meetings, you're more than welcome. It's important that we get a few people along and hear what's going on. We only hold a meeting when needed. So there's not many meetings to come along and attend.
I
think we sort of need to change the amount of...
committee members.
Yeah. I think that was the only thing because it was too many for the amount of people who were turning up.
Exactly. The quorum wouldn't be right.
Yeah, so it was just the quorum was cut back.
Right.
The quorum, yes, of course, the quorum.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks very much, ma'am.
The COVID-19 vaccination update,
Graham. This is just Drew Bedley. Just she updated the safety plan, which is available on her website. She updated it probably a fortnight ago. It'll probably need changing again in another fortnight. It's just a revolving bit of paper, unfortunately. So hopefully everyone's organised to have their shots and the doctor. And
of course.
I've had my two.
And I mean, I think council will be, and council staff are being very safe in what with their social distancing and trying to do the right thing all the time, sanitising, and that will just keep going for us.
So still we're under the guidance of Ben, so if anything comes out of the health department, we'll be certainly let us know.
Yeah, thank you. 15.6 Hamilton
Storage Treatment Plant. We had a meeting with a couple of professional people. The storage ponds down the back here below the council chambers, they will eventually be filled in, reclaimed. There's a plant that's going to go down there which is basically self-contained, let's say a building that treats the effluent. What comes out the other end will be a lot cleaner than what comes out now. So this is just an information one where basically Tazewater doesn't require anything from council because they're under their own act as such, so any works they do won't require planning approval and whatever. So this will just be work in process this one.
So they've moved away from the plan to come to recycling, I think.
Yeah, well, this one out the back's an aerated system. That's been there.
They've got all around the place.
So it's basically whether they build it or it's a trucked on one system.
Yeah. But the original plan was to relocate it. So they moved away from that.
Yeah, the discussion and the reuse was that Joneses, I think, were going to reuse it, but because of the size of the farm, it wasn't big enough to be able to cope with that. So it's gone away from that. So it'll be just the treatment plant on site, which will basically put it back in the device, so it's back in that cleaner than what is
now. That's good. Is there a time frame for that was possibly filled in?
I suppose once they get the other one up and it's plumbed in and working, the others will be pumped out, I would imagine.
We were talking about 2 years, I think.
They didn't actually say a time frame, but they'll be not really well. But there is one issue with this one that I'll put the pressure on Taswater to rectify, is that on the list system and the titles, it's still showing that Taswater own the lot next door, which has the vehicles parked on, the graders and the trucks. For some reason, we don't know why, but that's still in Taswater's ownership. Certainly put the pressure on Taswater.
Fix that,
you can go on the system now, even, you know. It's in Taswater's name, it's not in council. So we'll work with it. We'll get it rectified.
And it's still going through the process, isn't it?
Look, all the others changed over, so we don't know why that one is left.
They've probably issued the plan time problems.
Yeah.
I have something for a rate code that's been waiting 18 months for the entitlement to be issued. So
yeah,
there's probably an issue back there.
So we'll certainly ask the question and get it rectified anyway.
Thanks, Greg. 15.7, exhibition of Southern Midlands draft by the provision schedule, that was 419. 15.8, Waffle Recreation Ground, Councillor Caspian requested the following item be included on the council meeting agenda regarding Waffle Recreation Ground for decision. Councillor Caspian, over to you.
Well, I'm first of all disappointed that there wasn't any information in the supplementary or even there for the decision being made. I just want to let council know that we have a council policy that's been thrashed over multiple times about when the events should cease and the noise stop. This carried on until 3 o'clock in the morning. I think I didn't get to bed until 3:17. And it's supposed to be over and done with by 11:30 when the doors close at midnight. But they were, you know, carrying on with loud music and vehicles coming and going and so forth. So I did not get personally involved this time. I couldn't, you know, take that risk. So I called our 24-hour number. Council's 24-hour number to let someone at council deal with it, but nobody answered the phone. I called again, nobody answered the phone. I sent a text message, no reply. Not good enough. So, excuse me, one second, please. So, what I propose to council is that any after-hours events, weekend events and so on and so forth, the managers of those events should pass on their contact details and the alternate contact details to whoever's going to be holding that phone so they can be contactable in case of some emergency, whether it's a non-police emergency or whatever, building collapses or whatever. Somebody should be responsible. So that's one issue, that the event was not compliant with council policy. The other issue is that I couldn't reach anybody there at the council after hours numbers to deal with it. And there's no point calling the police because they're 45 minutes away and the fellow is less than helpful last time. So.
Can I just make a comment, the General Manager? What I'm thinking, perhaps we should revisit the Council's policy, because when we've got our local sports clubs, which are a seasonal, obviously, we don't have football or cricket, to my understanding, maybe there's some sort of leniency should be given to when they have a function. They don't have a function every match, they're not even playing at the local grounds. So maybe there's a little bit of room to move there for the local clubs to give them a little longer of an evening. You know, it's 1 o'clock. Maybe we should start thinking along those lines. Kodak, or one, it's the local club. Two, it's the, they bring in custom and people into our area of the weekend. So I think we need to seriously sit down and think about this. Over you, General Manager, or
I'd just like to sort of state there that if you'd run there through, the phone would have been answered because I didn't put the phone by my bed. That person had answered the phone, what did you expect? I would encourage them to go up to the recreation ground because they're not authorised to go up and disperse the people there. So you would have perhaps been told to call the police.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I can. So let's just think about this logically. We've got a policy that we've gone over two or three times now, and they still persist in extending beyond the official time that they should close. Now then, if we give them, let's say, 1 o'clock, they'll certainly carry on until 5 o'clock. If you give them until 2 o'clock, it'll be 6 o'clock. You know, before I came on council, or maybe it was just after I came on council, a petition was taken, and 14 people surrounding the rec grounds had signed that petition that they're affected by the loud music and noise. Okay? So this has been an ongoing issue for a very long time with local residents around the football grounds. Now, I understand that, you know, they want to celebrate and so forth, but they should not play the music so loud that it shakes the walls and the windows and, you know, can be heard throughout the community. John Hill, who used to live at the old police barracks on the hill, that's more than a kilometer away, he came to me to complain. He's no longer here in town, in Bothwell, of course, but he came to me to complain about the noise that he could hear way up there. David Hill is right, who used to own Wentworth House. Same, this fellow, he came over at 1 o'clock in the morning about the noise. So why should the rest of the community have to put up with this? Whether it's once in a blue moon or what? We've got a policy.
If I can, through the chair there, as the manager and looking after those policies, I have to correct you. Policy was abided by whoever was running the function, which was the football club. We made contact with the president and asked what time it had closed. There was a little bit of leeway with half hour cleaning up and leaving.
Yeah.
But that policy was abided by. Everything was done right through COVID. Whatever was set up and whatever was asked was done by that policy, by those persons. Finding out about what went on with noise afterwards, I asked the question to another manager on what may have happened on that night. Was the policy abided by? That came back and said, yes, it was. Well, the other matter, which was afterwards, was then a police issue. Not for someone to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning and put themselves at risk, and you did say you weren't prepared to risk yourself. So don't think that I'm going to send a worker or someone out to put themselves at risk at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well,
so the policy was abided by. If there's anything that happens after 12 o'clock at night, it becomes a police matter. Now, no one else in the community that I know of complained. No one else. I haven't had another one. If there was 2, 3, 4, or 5, well then I'm certain that the management would jump on it and ask why.
Thank you, Brian. Now we have the general manager, Councillor Fuller, and Councillor Armstrong.
That
was what Brian
addressed.
Councillor Fuller, Councillor
Armstrong. I'd just like to reiterate what Brian said there. There was no other complaint as far as I was I've been made aware, and I've made some inquiries with regard to this. They did adhere to the rules and regulations that we had set in place. I can hear, I'm reasonably close to the rec ground, I can hear it, and I actually got up to let the dog out, and I thought, oh, it's got a little bit quiet. It was just after 12 o'clock. You could hear cars moving, as I believe it had bothered me, but that was as much noise as there was. So I think, you know, this really is, needs to be sorted out, because we've had complaint after complaint from this council about this, and nobody else has made any complaint. So I think, you know, it's time to nip it in the bud and say enough. Secondly, if it's after midnight and the event is closed down, it becomes disturbing the peace, it becomes a police matter. And as for the councillors say that it's 45 minutes for the police to get there, we've got a police officer who's not there every night of the week, but the majority of the nights he's there, and he's 5 minutes away.
Thank you.
As chairperson of the committee, I've not had one complaint from anyone on the town about what's been going on there, so there's been nothing. If we're not informed, we don't know.
Just to clarify, I did actually have the on-call phone for Saturday night, so I just simply didn't hear the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. I did have two call-outs prior to that, which was around 5:30 at 6 o'clock. One was from Councillor Lawrence White, and Councillor asked the automated news about a dog that had one of our tags on it in Brisbane. So, but that was at half past 5 at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, but now I just simply didn't hear the phone at 3 a.m. And I meant, regardless if I had it or anyone else had it, the advice given to them, or would have had some concerns about that noise at that time of the morning, would have been to call the police.
Councillor Bailey?
Yeah, Mayor, I checked with some people from Bothell, as I wouldn't know yet, but I did check with some people from Bothell. And with their presence as well. And I was told that the complex itself closed at 12. And I think Graham might have mentioned it. They did do some cleaning up after that, but the music was probably still going then for a while. But it was turned down, and then the cars were going in and out. The complex was closed. The cars are going in and out. They can't walk outside and say, hey, come on, this car can't come in here, or that car can't come in. It's council property, and they can drive in and out. We can't drive in and stop them.
I think some vehicles stay there to say keep driving. Is that correct or not?
What's that?
Some people stay there.
Some do overnight.
Yes.
Yeah, when they've got along with an event like that, they do.
To avoid the
noise. Yeah.
Are you calling me a liar? The lights were on, the noise was playing. The music was playing very loudly at 3 o'clock in the morning. Are you calling me a liar? Yes or no? Yes or no? Are you calling me a liar?
A point of order.
Are you calling me a liar?
A point of order.
A point of order to you. Are you calling me a liar?
Could you leave the room?
Are you calling me a liar? Yes or no?
Could you leave the room?
Yes or no? The lights were on, the music was playing until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Counselor?
I'm happy to.
I'll speak with you about it.
As I know.
Very incorrect. Right.
Works and services, madam. Yes, works and services.
We have a
Councillors, I had a meeting with, is it Elaine or Elaine?
Elaine.
Elaine. Yeah, I got in trouble.
Yes, I heard.
With the notice board, we can actually purchase notice boards from, where am I? What's the name of this? Office Works, that's it. This one's an indoor, outdoor one, lockable, but Elaine said that she didn't really want the lock on it, but you know, it could just have to be out and it's got glass covered and that top front. Now, the question I'm asking is, council are funding, covering the cost of the purchase of the board, I take it?
Are we?
That's the question I'm asking.
Yeah, I think we are.
We did
allocate so much money for it, didn't we? Or something?
Because, anyway, if I go further, because this is, you're looking at, you know, about $1,800 for the board. Plus, we have to advertise because it's in the heritage area. So there's another $500 for there, plus the workers to put in some poles and basically put it up there. So we're probably looking at around about the $3,000 mark all up. So the question is council covering the costs of this board?
I mean, it's for a very good cause, and I do understand where Elaine's coming from. And she has done a lot of work on that, but suggested that she put in for an application on a community group. Did you?
Well, what I can do then, I'll suggest that an application be made for funding from the council to cover the costs of purchase, advertising, whatever it is, and put that together and come back to the next meeting.
That would be the best way. Okay. I think you've landed it on you before we do an application.
Going to purchase one of them for Bronte, because that was through the funding grants for the community board for that one. So it's a good one for us.
Yeah, and as a patient, she's a good community person. She's the one that did
that. Has she been that well?
Yes,
And she's happy with that?
Yes. But, I better ask the question first.
Well, councillors, would you like to go ahead and say that we will purchase the board with the one for Bronte?
Someone's got to find out where Elaine is, if she's already got some material or something.
No, through the chair, I'm basically, we met on site, this is it, are you happy with that? This is where it's going to go. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine, but if Elaine's progressed to somewhere else.
No. She's waiting for me to basically go. Yep, it's all been.
I think we need to follow the mere process, which is just for an application and there's every chance to get that.
Yeah.
It's still too much information.
Go for that. Okay. Yeah. Very good, John.
Okay.
I think that's it. Thank you.
We're done. Thank you.
Thank you. CCA Works and Services, welcome to Jason.
Well, afternoon.
A moment of please. Councillor Connor. And second up, Councillor Bailey.
Yeah.
Time for
a
then we're
going
okay.
Yep. Brother is lunch and dinner is
doing
something
special, so we better not be late.
Nearly
there, aren't we? I've got an agenda item anyway. There was something more than that. Deputy Mayor, would you take the chair, please? The only thing I had, Jason, the vehicle that's down at Hayes Bridge that's been burned out, do you know anything about it? I saw it when they were going down there. Must have been Friday.
Whereabouts that? I mean,
on Friday, Friday.
It's on the main road.
Burned out sitting there, and I know there's a process to go to the police to get them to
check. But on the mile,
Yes.
That DSJ will deal with that. If it's on the law line.
It's on the law line.
Can you make sure that they've got a law line?
I'll call them, yeah.
It's not a good thing for us to have
a look at that. Well, I'll only get a phone call after I said that.
It's that little park that's the size of the bridge there.
So, effectively, just Jason's information, there's no specific things that you need to bring up, Jason?
Like specific to general items, I think for advising was like bridges.
Yeah, photos are there.
Yep.
Yes, looks very good, Jason.
Well, we're there. Can I ask?
Can we all say, everyone talking at once?
Sorry.
Hey, Councillor Archer, would you like to address the meeting?
Right. Now. The bridge down at, that went across on the Bowden's property, you know, the.
Yeah, cross on the Bristol.
It was
in the original budget.
Yes, it was, and then we took it out. Yes, thank you. I thought that.
So, yeah, just basically, Blackstone Lane for voting has been completed. Update and come on stage 6, obviously it's turned cold and wet to the ceiling, but all the materials have been laid on the earthworks have been done. It's just got to be stabilised and shielded in the summer months, so we'll come back and do that. And bottle stormwater, that's almost completed. There's just a couple of finishing off touches that need to be done.
Quick question on that, Jason. They were going to do a bit more, weren't they, just to...
That's been completed.
Link it in.
Yep. So that's been done. So, and
apart from
that, all
the... So, to reiterate what Ron Saunders said, good deck table drains there. It's a great job.
Good.
Probably now, it looks to me like it's a bit extra width than what would be standard. Yeah. Have I got that right?
Yep.
Yeah. So yep. Good sight lines, good width, good table drains.
Yep.
And it'll last for years.
Speaking of table drains, what about the ones that washed out down the road?
That's been done.
How did they fix it?
Rock lining.
Yeah, the fresh ones had rock lining as well, couldn't they? Were they like a scorched out or not?
They did get them all done because it was obviously the cost of doing it, but yeah, no, it was done. Some of that was through the bushfire and loose money.
So they should withstand these rainfall events they get there now.
Well,
I think it's down too steep, they can have them go slow.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully what we've done will be easy and we would like to say half again, but I mean, there is a possibility that it can. Yeah.
Is it worth sowing grass seed on them to try and stabilise them in the spring?
Yeah, that's what we are going to put some vital mulch on some of these sections of the batters up here on stage 6 of Pella. So, yeah, that's what we have actually anticipated to do down there as well.
The time to do it would be now, so it's, you know, gives the advantage of the spring warmth.
Yeah, so I know we'll think about another couple of weeks, 3 weeks, yeah, get it done. It was actually, that is what cancer did in the first place.
Was it?
And it started to grow, and then we had the bushfires. Took it all away.
But if anyone's got any more questions, do you need the other question with Jason?
No.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Over to you,
Jason.
Admin, 17.4.
Okay, 7.1 remission from the delegation recommendation. Move, Councillor Connell, second please. Councillor Bowley, 4. Against, carried. 7.2, Cycle Road Program. Recommendation of the General Manager be authorised to sign and seal the deed variation Cycle Road Program and Road. Councillor Bowley, move. Councillor Horrod, second.
Didn't even know that. No, that's fine. I don't care if someone else wants to.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
You
wouldn't put that. I was only doing something on the court.
Okay. Marshall's going to get 1743 if we do. Usually this is a meeting.
That happens every couple of years, so I can't correct it.
Theoretically. And then the code of conduct, that's about getting along with the state government to change anything that was in MA to the local government at 1993. For that, if the determination of court, the council is required to go signing.
Well, I support that, Mayor. If councillors are idiots, so they've got to pay for it.
Okay, well, put your hand up if you support that motion. Show of hands if you support
it. Yeah, I do.
Or you don't support it. Oh, I'm going to have to go around the table with this. So, support or not support?
The councillor has to go under.
I think it inhibits someone's, I think, ability to even slightly argue with whoever, because it end up costing them, and it'll take people off the team.
Alrighty. Councillor, I'm support.
Jenny, support.
No. Councillor, Paul, support or not support the motion?
I'm a bit up in the air over this. I mean, there's so much talk about the code of conduct moment and the reviews that they intend to bring in place. I think we should just leave it as is on that basis, no.
Don't support. Councillor
Casey. I'm along with Jim on that. Don't support. I don't support.
Councillor Bailey.
Yeah, well, I do.
You do support?
Yes.
So we've got 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, and I don't support, so we don't support that one.
Mayor, has anyone ever had to do this? Is it expensive? It's outside my experience. Is it like going to cost someone $50 or $1,000?
This is what happened at Kingston, Edinburgh, where the ratepayers had to stump up.
It
was a retraining for a councillor who was allowed to raise.
How much did it cost?
What?
$100,000.
Oh, I don't know. They said $10,000 or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Look, this is a government sponsored system.
The
council, and that was well, you change your vote. Like, that's what you come up
with. I think it's right.
Okay, so.
Well, you agree the rate payers. Well, that's what you want the rate payers should pay for.
12.1.
Sorry. Yeah.
Is renewable energy project developments on Crown land. This is a circular head one. Decision to sort is the local government forget. Lobby the state government on behalf of all local councils for the implementation of the state development policy to make suitable ground land of available broadcast to renewable energy project developments to support social and economic development. Support or not support?
No, I don't support it.
No.
I don't support that.
Is there anyone that supports it?
Oh, I would support it. I mean, local government, it's Crown land.
I think it's Crown land.
They make it available for tourists to walk around and helicopters to go into. So.
I think we should support it, quite honestly. I mean, it's not just saying every
it's not
square metre of the land is going to be used, and I think it's only where acceptable land is, and I think it's something we should support.
I'll go around the table again, my chef. Okay. Councillor Orr, support or not?
Yeah, I'll support. Yeah.
Support Councillor Arden?
No, I don't.
Councillor Bowman?
Yeah, I support.
Councillor Bonham?
Don't support.
Councillor Paul?
Do support.
Councillor Cassidy?
No.
Councillor
Bailey? I do support, ma'am. We've not got no idea what all this is about.
And
and I did read. What it's about is that the Northern Midlands Council got done over in the Supreme Court over
rates for the airport.
No. It was to do with the subdivision. I've got it's in there. It's to do with the subdivision and it's going to sound something like the council tried to make the developer upgrade the road and the access into it, and the developer used a loophole to get the council to do it. Something like that. But there'd be some discussion at the time, wouldn't there, about this?
They
just have to make up their mind.
So you leave it up to us?
Yeah, leave it up to you.
Okay. 14.2, integrated regional housing supply strategy. That was a decision sought that local government lobby the state government to develop an integrated housing supply strategy in partnership with federal government and private sector to deliver a diversified housing supply to all areas of housing under supply across the state. Comments, please. Leave it to us?
Yes.
Because once you hear them speak to it, it can change your mind. 14.3, review of the State Regional Land Use Strategies Council. Circular here, what was going on. Decision sought that local government body of the state government to activate a comprehensive review of all state regional land use strategies, given the expanding development of rural lands and statewide housing shortages being experienced in most local government areas. Yes?
Yeah,
support. Mm-hmm. Okay. 4.4, management. Forget lobbying the state government on behalf of all local councils for the early completion of coastal hazards management for existing settlements and valleys project with a final report of recommendations being made.
Very applicable to the Central Highlands coastal management. So with climate change, Great Lake might be coastal.
So we'll just go ahead and support the group. 14.5, Community-Based Engagement Strategy Council, that the Gatta Valley State Government on behalf of all local councils for the implementation of local community-based strategy to inform and empower local communities to have a better understanding of the policy contents and opportunities for social and economic well-being through enhancing a strong and growing renewables industry across Tasmania.
That's hard to understand.
Support? Sorry?
Yes.
Could be a trick.
Yeah. 14.6, Parks and Wildlife Service Maintenance Infrastructure. Again, lobby the state government on behalf of all local councils for the implementation of a coordinated long-term 10-year strategic asset management plan to be implemented by the Tasmanian Parks and Wildlife Service for all their customer-facing public use assets and infrastructure.
I don't agree.
Support?
Yes.
14.7, Environment Protection Authority Rolling Plan Assessment. The Legat Lobbied State Government on behalf of all local councils for improved and mandated Environment Protection Authority overall transparency, community basic participation, and engagement processes in the assessment of development proposals towards the Environment Protection Authority and levels of responsibility in determined recommendations and approvals.
Yeah, I think we ought to support that one. If people lobby the EPA, they won't lobby the council over something that the council hasn't got any say. That's what happens, so we should support that.
14.8 is the GATT lobby the state government to increase the resources of the GATT management and crop control of the wheat.
Yes.
No motion received for 15 and 16 public policy agenda. The GATT investigate the option of the introduction of propositions for referendums for local and state elections and then a mechanism for this change to be implemented. That's
I thought they already had that, so they used different words for it. What's a petition?
Or a proposition.
What's a petition mean?
A petition is what? Let's put together and present to the council. A referendum. Do you vote this or not?
Oh,
do you want to get rid of the state government?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. That's a referendum. Everyone is entitled to vote.
So that'll double the cost of the local government if we have a referendum.
In mind, if councils want to propose to get a reaction or anything, and a fair view from the community.
But they can do that without a referendum, I thought.
And that's why this is from the government.
We didn't have the deputy general manager not in any
agreement.
Well, it would double the cost between
that and the Okay, and 16.2, recognition of assistance dogs. The Legat Lobbied State Government, on behalf of all local councils, for the inclusion of assistance animals in the Dog Control Act 2000, Section 382, as they provide a valuable community welfare service.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's
a good idea too.
Yeah.
So that's
I'm surprised it's not even in there, but guide dogs don't need controlling though, they've got no
hearing dogs and pick up their rules. So recommendation that council note items 1 to 9.16 and advise the mayor as voting delegate for Central Islands. Councillor Ridley. Councillor Connor seconded. Councillor Arden. For Councillor Carrick. Amendment to fees and charges. Okay, this one is right. 1744 is amendment to fees and charges.
Yes,
recommendation by Councillor Honor. Second by Councillor Aura. Four against that is carried. We will now break for lunch until 1:10, if that sound reasonable.
Yep. Do what on,
ma'am? 1:10, that gives us.
Yeah.
About 40 minutes.
They want to call me. I know, spring break, I'll have that suit. I don't have to back on my leg.
The last study that was done that would contribute to what benefits came out of it, and projects were identified by KPMG that would benefit Central Highlands Council. That's point one. The second point is, did we actually include that $10,000 in our budget?
No, we haven't.
So then, we're giving away $10,000.
The study which will be laid on through the funding for the subsidiary group were successfully getting funding for the workforce coordinator, $300,000, and basically received this morning and discussed what he was doing with that and the benefits that we were getting. The benefits to the Central Highlands through that.
So if we're doing the study, we know what we need to lobby the federal and state governments for.
And we can come up with, as you said, a lot of them can come up at the meeting with future projects. They can be...
Well, what a small fry. It's hard to hear, isn't it? I think we're only small fry in this... in this scheme, and that our $10,000 is going to help them and not much help to us.
Not quite so. I'd add a Deputy General Manager.
I would just like to say that the information gathered from studies like this will benefit us tenfold in the future, because that will actually give us information that we can add to grant grant applications, like the one that Anthony was pushing through trying to get the flood levy and those sorts of things to support that and to show how if we use some funding in the municipality, how that gains more employment, how it helps like the tourist industry, how it helps the farming industry, how it helps the mining industry and those sorts of things. And it provides us with information, and that's one of our biggest downfalls with our applications and why we can't get those large grants like the one that's in here for like $1.6 million. To get grants like that and more, we have to have these fuzzy words, okay? And fuzzy studies, I know it's $10,000 and you might just think it's a fuzzy thing, but it will give you benefits, just like that report that Alex had up there regarding tourism and that strategy he had. I've used that a number of times to get grants. We got $30,000 for the bicentennial grant. We got the picnic table down here, $5,000, because we had that study and we could prove that we were working towards that and working towards making Tasmania a better place. Because really, we are a municipality, but we've got to make this a better place. And that's the way we've got to do it. And if we're looking at federal grants, how we make Australia better.
And it's the four councils, isn't it, Adam?
That's correct. Yes.
Just four councils. Okay. Which is Southern Midlands.
Oh, no, that anyway. I'll make the recommendation. Me?
Those four.
Quick question, Mayor. Do we get any input into what they actually study? Can we leave that study?
You can read the minutes any time you wish from the...
I've read the report, but I don't get whether they're actually suggesting. Yeah.
The mayor and the general manager are both delegates on that committee.
I see.
And they have that input, and they can provide that input. And if they're not available, I'm more than happy to go along.
Yeah.
I'm only a member of that committee with Anthony to look at employment side. I'm not part of the other ones, but more than happy to do that if ever called on.
And I think Anthony's delegation today was important to let you know what things are happening and it's beneficial to the central government. He's obviously doing a lot of the central government. The recommendation was moved by Councillor Bailey, second by Councillor Moore. Those for the recommendation. Is there anyone against that recommendation? That is carried. Thank you.
May I ask you a question? Is this an annual thing? Does this come up annually?
No,
I was just wondering that, you know, since we've got the $10,000 that, you know, wasn't budgeted for, perhaps in the future, budget workshops, we could set some money aside.
We should have some funds
for that first.
The road between Milton Mowbray and Boston.
And the
Mowbray
is a massive one, so I think, that's a good
point. About Boston, Boston Chimney Field there, so we don't have that added as well, so it's kind of quite happy for me to negotiate this agreement with the partnership with Alex.
Yes.
I'd like to have it.
We have perhaps our council signed a partnership agreement with
these. Yeah.
Clinics.
How long does this go for? Maybe 12 months or?
4 months.
Yeah. I'd like us not to be in it at all. You know, you said 6 months effectively support.
Sorry.
Is this the chap was telling us this morning? Is 6 to 10 businesses in it? But that's
cool. Yeah.
6 to 10
businesses.
6 to 10 businesses are members,
yes.
Formal members, but they're still like the TPA. They represent all farmers, even though they're not members. That's what you said.
Yeah, they represent the whole region.
They represent everyone.
Businesses can become members. That's part of their funding. But that doesn't mean they don't represent the rest of the region. So.
Okay, it was moved by Councillor Honour, second by...
I'll second that.
Councillor Allred. For. Against. Eric. 17.7 total for the equivalent of the woman board. The only thing to say on this that I information I know is Kylie approached me on Anzac Day at Greetham and had a chat to me about this. And I said, yes, that sounds good, but you'll have to address this with council. And the only thing that I would certainly not support is to put some installation up near the actual war memorial that's lit up on the night. It was absolutely fantastic. If she were to be successful and come to council, I think it would be important to put something down where you first walk through the gateway in the stones. So that was my only thoughts when this came up.
I thought the showing of the library needs, you know, everything's going to be done over for them.
Yeah, the planner advised that this proposal is still being classed as an interpretive sign and will require a discussion and planning for. But in saying that, what's council's feel about that? Council Cassidy?
I don't believe they should attach anything to that till one more.
Not up at the war
memorial.
What about the entrance
to
the gate on the
highway? Probably down at the entrance of the gate, as long as it's not going to be vandalized or interfere with public seating where we usually have it.
So,
will
the general manager and I meet with the hills and have a chat and bring some back some information, perhaps?
He'll go through a planning system, so we'll get plenty of opportunity to have a look at it. Although it is discretionary, it doesn't have to come to the planning committee, but I reckon it'll end up as discussion somewhere.
Yeah, just to come back to some kind
of
who's
watching
the application,
who's going to
have to
watch
the
application. Alright. Oh, that's too complicated for me. I mean, it's planning committee, I don't know about that stuff. You would have to. Yeah, I would have to go on. No, we'll Graham would know, wouldn't he?
I think we need some
more information.
Perhaps some designs and things put across the table for us to discuss and perhaps have a consular meeting.
I've got some silhouettes here, that doesn't mean nothing, that doesn't say a lot. But.
Billy Blacksmith's history, Billy Blacksmith's out there at Boswell. So can we just too much about it, but I might ask. Who seconded that motion?
I did. Well, yeah, you are.
Those for the motion? Is there anyone against? It is passed. 7.4.3, Green Agreement, Regional Tourism Project, Program Round 3. Recommendation, General Manager be authorised to sign and seal the Grant Agreement of the Department of State Growth for the Regional Tourism Project, Program Round 3.
Yes. And, Councillor, I'd just like to make you aware, we wouldn't receive this $5,000 grant without the support of the Southern Tasmania, Destination Southern Tasmania. So we wouldn't have received it because their letter of support got us over the line.
Well done.
So even though we've got paid out $6,000, we've got this other $5,000 in, and there are other grants coming through from tourism that they will support as well. And I also spoke to Alex on the way out. He's more than happy to support our projects for the Black Saturday grants that we're going to talk about coming up. So he's more than providing letters of support for those as well.
Very good. And that's excellent.
Is there a co-payment period for this?
Sorry?
Is there a co-payment that we're required to make for 17.8?
Co-payment?
Yes, we received $5,000.
And get $5,000 and then
and another we've got another 5,000 from council, and then so we've got 10,000. Yeah, we're going to put a slab in and
But let's answer the question. So it's another $5,000 we've got to find as a council.
Where are
you? That's already in the budget.
In the budget?
I have spoken to Graham about today, and I said, Graham, you probably want to put into these grants, if we want to look at security cameras, say at the history room, or at the pub with no beer site, or other sites, there's money here available. We've just got to get Graham to do those applications.
And what I had, I was having a few notes when I was reading, and I thought, fencing.
Or unless we can provide other resources that will aid Graham to do those.
And what about a restructure over the bottom swimming pool?
Out of this one.
Would that?
One of the later grants, the bushfire recovery one, not this one. This one's just for security stuff.
I'll put that one on the other one.
Men must be pleased.
Yeah, wait a minute. Picnic table, public amenities, all those sort of things. Councillor Paul.
I had a meeting earlier this week with Scott Carter from TMAG regarding the board pointer display that they indicated some time ago they would bring up to the Historical Society, i.e. the Visitor Centre. They're more than happy to go ahead with that. I also mentioned to him that we would like, the Historical Society would like to open up the display rooms for the European Bicentennial Celebration, and would they be willing to assist us? He said we would most certainly be willing to assist, but he questioned whether there was a security system. Which I said there wasn't in the Historical Society. I know we've talked about this in the past, and I can't remember what was decided, whether we decided to go ahead with it or not, but I know here it does say part of the thing you can apply for is security and alarm systems. So again, could we possibly get Graham to put an application for this grant for that particular system?
It is on the list.
That'd be up to the general manager to decide on the resources.
Anyone else in the comments?
Do we need any window or possibly the ground? I don't know. Do we need any fencing or anything like that for tip sites?
Well,
I don't know about your diet best.
Do we need fencing with black horse wool? We probably need a little bit of fencing corrected at the bottom of the beer, I know.
Like if you wanted to re-fence, say, the football grounds or something like that, with security fences and those sort of things, you'd probably do it out.
We talked about the football ground fence before.
Was it another Pacific Coast?
Okay, any comment? Well, if you have any other ideas to add on, or leave them to the general manager. Yep, okay, sounds good. 17.10, Inland Fisheries Service invites council to help shape regional fishery. John Hill. Recommendation and comments on the draft Inland Fisheries Strategy 2021-28 forwarded to the Deputy General Manager by close of business Monday the 9th of August.
Read something in the agenda for the LACAT conference to do with Council of Amalgamation. I just want to discuss it.
The reform?
Yeah, we're talking about
that wasn't in any of the, was that in any of the motions? No.
It doesn't say amalgamation, but it talks about some, all councils being reformed.
That's incorrect, isn't it?
Something to jump on.
Yes.
The state government wants it.
Yeah, make it like all councils. I get that.
Yeah.
I did read that too, but I can't say exactly where it was.
It's in the agenda for the people at that conference.
Yeah.
One of the things.
The Central Highlands do not agree with that, do they?
No, that's not.
Okay. 17.12, Great Lakes Community, we just invited Tony to New York. They didn't find it yet, but no. Also looking at putting in a grant under that funding Save the Community Fund Round 6, and they're looking at wanting to put in CCTV security at Great Lake, and basically want to know if council support that.
And then support it financially or just support it, we give them a letter of support.
I'll be happy for them to put that infrastructure in if that's what we're calling. How are
we? More than happy. Thanks very much.
Women murder, Black Summer Bushfire Recovery Grant.
So I reckon a really good one for that, which was one of the biggest problems in the bushfire. What we had a couple of years ago was communication, and of course we had no phone coverage, for example. And this is a big possibility of a big grant, so get them to put a tower up on Table Mountain where it would give them everybody. You can see Table Mountain from anywhere.
I couldn't agree more. Can you say we have the money asset?
Yeah, we've got to own the asset. So...
that makes it scary.
Yeah. Telstra, we do have a lease site on Table Mountain, but
okay.
I know that they didn't prefer to use Table Mountain because of the line of sight or something.
And
you
can see the high tower up there for years.
Absolutely.
You can see it from everywhere.
But
it doesn't make sense.
And there's power not far away, so it would be 2 or 3 k's to run power.
We got power there.
Really?
Yeah, we got a radio station.
Mains power?
No, we got.
I know, but they're
all mains power.
So what would you like to do about that?
Get them to do it.
Well, okay. It's not our infrastructure though.
It was a classic, perfect thing for the.
And mobile powers that don't really last that long in a fire.
Well, the grant's closed on the 2nd of September, so we have another council meeting between now and then.
We'd be better off buying affordable power and having it in the depot. And when we have it, why we bring the power out?
Adam and Katrina went to the workshop that they held on. Oh, yeah. Adam might tell you what the price
is. Yeah. So this is for the Pelham Fires. So everything must relate to the Pelham Fire. So all the recovery, the cohesion, the benefits to the community and the support is for the Pelham Fire. Not the big fire we have out there, it's a Pelham Fire. Because that's what it's for. So everything has to relate back to that. So you could build a multi-purpose building, either in maybe Ellendale or Boone, Lockwell or Hamilton, that it could be used as part of the recovery process for the future. So we're building something, but you know, to have people have to live in this building for a week or two would be pretty difficult. But you could build a multi-purpose building that could also be a council office during some stages, a recovery centre during others, a council building. Like, you know, you could put in, say, $2 million to build this and that we all work together to have that. Or you could look at other projects like replacing the toilet block across the road, knocking that down, putting a new toilet block, new camping facilities there, so that if there was a fire, it could be used as part of the recovery process where we had a number of people that didn't have accommodation, they didn't want to stay somewhere, they wanted to live in their own caravan. We could set up that and provide them with power and everything there, and a camp kitchen and everything. Or we could do that at Bothell.
Well, Brett,
what about, wasn't there discussion going back, turn back a bit about a tower being put on private property at Pelham, where one of the ministers went up and had a look with Ron Simons?
Yeah, but the problem is who's going to do your application? There's no one. Lynn's going to have to put money into the budget now. To get these grants, we're going to have to look at spending $30,000 to get this money, okay? Because we don't have the resources, we don't have the ability to do the applications, the ability to tie them back to that fire. Or we do it as part of overtime or something like that. But there's ways of doing it. But if we're looking at large things like a communication tower, we don't have communication engineers. Telstra would have to do that on our behalf. We've got a small window of opportunity. The grants have to be in by the 2nd of September. Everything has to be completed. Got to get letters of support and those sorts of things. We could even get Southern Midlands or the state government to provide us with a little bit of support for Telstra to put the tower in at Pelham. We put up $120,000. If we got to $400,000, Telstra would have been more than happy to put the tower in. But we couldn't get support from Southern Midlands or the state government during the last election for that money. So, you know, we could focus on towers, but I think you're going to miss the opportunity and miss the boat. Like, you know, talking to Lynn yesterday, do we look at getting a new community bus, replacing the old one, you know, putting $70,000 so that we can use that as part of the recovery process, but also use it as part of our local wellbeing program. You know, do we put $200,000 in for a community health program for the next 2 years, so that we're supporting the community. We're building resilience, and that's what it's got to be part of. It's got to be part of building resilience, part of recovery. recovery, part of how we can get through hard times. So, you know, it's trying to build those sorts of things. You know, you might get away with maybe building some playground equipment or something like that. You might be able to tie that in where you could show that, you know. I'm guessing that, you know, we've got to come up with these ideas. Like, if you want to replace those toilets at Medibank or something like that, someone's going to have the wording to be able to say how that is tied into the bushfires that come on. But you can go for more than $1.6 million. We could do the bike track at Great Lake if we wanted to, which is $5 million, which is $5 million, and put in an application for $5 million. But we've got to put up money to do the application.
So we've got Deputy Mayor and Councillor Paul on the
what do you want? See, the timeline's short, have I got that correct?
Timeline's short.
Sure. So, what do you want from us? Do we look at our capital expenditure budget and say, what have we got? Some money for a unit at Elmdale, it's hard to top an all the other capital work programs. How much time do you need to tie this stuff in? How much time do you need? Because otherwise you're going to leave it in the day with AFIS. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, we can leave it in the day with AFIS, but still got to have resources.
AFIS and some resources.
I'm on leave in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, you need to leave it in the day with AFIS and some resources.
Yeah, but if there's five projects, I might do one, Lynn might have to do one, Graham might have to do one. You've also got him doing three other projects for that other one as well. Then you get Jason to do one, you get Katrina to do one. Yeah, look, there's five.
So
it's probably not going to add up to $1 million, but you're going to lose. You've just lost $600,000 because whatever we don't go for goes back into the pot. So if someone's gone now for $2 million, that's why I said a few months ago we should have shovel-ready projects.
Yes, we should have.
We should have shovel-ready projects. If we don't get these grants, right, we might invest $30,000. If we don't get the grants, it's still shovel-ready for the next lot of grants that are going to come out. There's still going to be more stimulus. COVID's still going on. We've got South Australia going into lockdown for 7 days now, from 6 o'clock tonight. The economy ain't going to get better. They're going to be throwing more grants in the next 12 months, the next 2 years, because to stimulate the economy. So, you know, if we don't get something, don't be, you know, it's just like the ones we did for the floods. We didn't get it, but we can work on those for the future. It's about continuously
So the toilet block at the boat ramp up here. I half had an idea that was already planned because we cut down the trees about three years ago, so we could do that. So you've got the grant we got went to the other side of the camping ground. But has Graham got some plans for the toilet block at the boat ramp up there? And have you got the words that can tell them that we're helping?
Graham's going to have to get the words if he's going to do that. We're going to be doing this one across here.
Oh, you want to do that?
Well, I can do one.
Okay. We'll do it. I can't.
Just for the moment, can you hear the four of Cassidy in there?
I'm right. You're
right, Cassidy.
So just picking up on something that Adam was saying, building and so forth, for some place for people to go during an emergency. There's no longer a town hall down in Gretna that's been sold off, I believe. But I was wondering if we have any land down there that's available or any space, let's say near the fire station or behind it. Perhaps we could build a community center there with toilets and kitchen. This way people would have some place to recover to or go to. There's emergency or crisis, and there'd be a facility that council could use.
And I think we should take a step back and we should look at locations, safe locations. I don't feel Gretna is one because they nearly got burned out,
You know, we've got to look at locations and where our evacuation centres were, our hospital in Hamilton. We have to put a little bit more thought into this, I think.
But like, you've got a lovely piece of ground, the old school site, the old oval there. Yeah. You can put a multi-purpose building there, if you wanted to.
Where are they?
Because you're coming around the corner into Hamilton. You've got the oval there. You know, I'm not sure what the zoning is of that oval, but could you put a multi-purpose building there?
Do we own that?
Yeah.
It used to be Hamilton Park School.
You know, if you wanted to build something big, and if you do go to, say, $2 million, yes, you're going to have to come up with a difference between 1.6 and 2 million, but if some other councils didn't go for their amount and that goes back in the pot, you can get a little bit more. So, but council has to, you've got to weigh up the risks, weigh up the opportunities, and decide what you want to do. You know, we can pick a couple of, we can do small projects like get a community bus, maybe upgrade the tourist facilities here, do a playground at Bronte Park,
But that's
our colour. The council's got his hand up there.
Being as we're not shovel ready, and being as this really is a short period before we have to have these applications in, would it not be sensible for us to have a workshop on getting large, small, all sorts of different applications ready, so they are all shovel ready, so when an application becomes available, we can put it in.
So they are equipment very more, we may do that.
And there's an election. There's going to be an election in a year anyway.
Yeah.
In around a year,
but
so.
Always we should have shovel ready.
Yeah.
Projects. Okay, I think I've got an idea of a multi-purpose recovery centre pulled over up there. Would be worth a try?
Would be worth
a try? A try, because you could put your commercial kitchen and everything in there. There are a couple of little rooms, storage rooms or office space.
And what would it be useful if it
when
it,
by the community?
No, no, when there's an emergency.
That's an important thing for people to go to get fed, sleep if they have to.
Just another building, we've got to allocate money to maintain.
Yeah, but then, do we need to spend money on this building? We could all use the multi-purpose building is part of the council chambers as well. So it might be a multi-purpose building in your council chambers.
Well, you still got to do it to maintain it.
But that's something that...
I can think that's not going to be shovel ready in 6 weeks.
No, the application's going to be ready.
Yeah.
The project doesn't have to be completed until 2024.
Yeah.
Okay?
We could do
that. It's not going to start until next financial year. Application has to be used.
So why don't we do that?
Even on that basis that it's got to be completed by 2024, if we decide now to go ahead and put a large building up there, A, we've got to get all through the planning system. Secondly, we've got to get a builder. And at the moment, you're going to be struggling. You're not going to get it done by 2024.
Councillor Cassidy?
I think we should just do it. What the hell? What do we got to lose? You know? We're building up there. You know, this way, it's a it ended as being a council asset. Yes, we have to maintain it, but I think it'd be good.
But you could demolish the building next door, so you're not paying for that. And then restore this back to its original state.
I think we should consider the location on the Hamilton Show Grounds as well. Because I've seen the oval and it's always been like an emergency landing for helicopters and things like that. So I'm a little bit undecided about that.
Some landowner issues there.
Yeah.
Amongst the things I'd like to see, and I don't know about the budget now, but I'd like to hear about the workshop or the discussion about this. Yeah. I'd really like to see, like an upgraded fit for purpose building in Hamilton here, if that was
considered by other people to be a useful project for us to look for funding for. It would be a large capital investment, something in my view we're going to have to do anyway. But I like the idea of sitting down and having a strategic discussion about this, and then put 4,500 projects, and if we get one or two up, that's okay, but it's always the sting in the tail is what co-funding do we need to put, and my understanding of this is there isn't any. And if that's the case, great, thanks very much. Why not ask for the moon, and we might receive the mountaintops, but it's too good an opportunity for us not to really be looking at trying to capture some funds.
Yeah, and I think it's too premature to just throw something up.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's the problem, the time constraints.
Okay, I'll just go around the table for your views, and then we'll come to some sort of decision. I'll start with the
My view on whether we should do what?
From here.
What project or what project we have or what?
Anything you have to say, because Adam is asking us for a project manager.
Oh no, the general manager is.
The general manager.
That's what I said, that's what the report says. The general manager has requested.
That is what the report that says the general manager said. Yeah,
not me, I mean the
default. Well, we'll just go around the table.
I can only think of upgrade the facilities at the showground so that the spillover from the camping ground can go up there. And there's the toilets at the boat ramp. Can't think of anything offhand that's possible.
So upgrade the facilities at the showground,
the
facilities you're talking about?
Well,
toilets.
Yeah, so we need to have, let's say, replicate what's here so that the overflow of caravans can go on there.
Yeah,
otherwise, we're going to have to do something down in the paddock down on top, plenty of foot there.
So, you're talking about the caravan site? Yeah.
Well, sort of. I'm not. Yeah, well, at least that's the way I've described it.
No, you have described it as an overflow
caravan. Yeah, I mean, otherwise, because that chock a block full, and then Dun Robbins full sometimes.
So
what do we do? Turn those caravans away.
Yeah, what was the other thing you mentioned?
Well, it's just the upgrade the toilets at the boat ramp and at the boat ramp up here at Dun Robin and the showground for camping.
I'd like to see a cover over the loss of swimming pool meter. This time I'm not paying for it.
A roof,
absolutely.
A roof over the swimming pool?
Yep. And have it enclosed and make a bigger space. I also think, I like Adam's suggestion, not necessarily here in Hamilton, but I think we need to look at a more COVID-friendly evacuation centre for the area somewhere. It may well be in the Highlands, or that's something we need to get some advice on. But new COVID plans and restrictions are not going to go away tomorrow. We were told that our ball wouldn't be suitable anymore. The way we've managed it before wouldn't be suitable anymore, so perhaps a COVID-ready facility somewhere for emergency evacuation might be something for us to further explore. But I think there are a lot of small projects that we could put up. I love the idea of a portable phone tower. I like the idea of building ambulance and emergency service stations scattered around the municipality. It wouldn't necessarily have to be there all the time. One that we've already discussed at the lakes, one in Markham, for instance. So we can put forward a number of projects that don't have to be a great deal of money each, but will add up to significant savings for us. But we need to be very mindful of maintenance on them, so they need to be built and funded in such a way it doesn't cost us any dough going forward. But we can sell it as a parcel of projects towards recovery.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of a phone tower pillar. The service there is appalling as well, but perhaps we do need to put the portable station in that Adam says to make it viable. If this is money for nothing, why would we not devote a lot of resources in having some things?
Well, we should have
had one. I mean, maybe we'll be the ambulance station. It needs to be on our land, because you've got to actually put in the application where it's going.
Absolutely, and we've got land in a lot of these places, haven't we?
Depending on where you put them.
Exactly.
You don't need the DA approval.
Well, Councillor Bowden.
So I agree with Jim that those toilets need going up. And perhaps there'd be some money for seats on the toilets in Bothell, really.
He did seats.
You want heating on the toilet seats?
Just seats.
Please remember that the project had to be a minimum of $20,000.
$20,000
worth of toilet seats. Yes, $20,000 more to $10 million.
Heating seats.
You know, it's going to spend till we're going to spend that.
Okay, Councillor Honour, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a multi-purpose here in Hamilton would be good.
Multi-purpose?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, yeah, upgrade of the Telstra Towers and Abercillum.
Yeah, that one seems to be coming up pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I can think of at the moment.
Thank you, Councillor Ford.
Listening to the conversation around the table, a lot of these things I don't think you are going to be able to tie them back into being affected by the on fire, and I think that would knock a lot of these on the head. So I'm really not willing to put anything forward at this stage. I just think we should have a workshop and get shovel ready.
You're not supporting the
Pelham
Tower?
I'm happy with the Pelham Tower, yeah. Yeah, that's probably one thing I'll be happy with.
Okay.
Councillor
Cassidy.
Well, I would support building a multi-purpose center. I think here in Hamilton would be a good place for it, replete with kitchen and toilets and sufficient space to accommodate evacuation. Also, insofar as communications, you mentioned, Adam, a portable system. How about a portable satellite phone system that could be used anytime, anywhere, day or night? And especially if it had solar panels or self-powering a little bit.
Yeah, like I guess Telstra do have them at the moment. They have like a generator power type system that they can bring in, and we're happy to bring it in to Myena if we pay for it. It was $50,000 to bring it in. To hire it.
Can we buy something like that ourselves, or like a satellite phone system?
But the problem is, are we going to buy technology that in 5 years' time is going to be redundant?
Well, satellite phone system won't work.
And I guess, yeah, Telstra aren't going into towers. Telstra about to sell all their towers off. So are we going to go into an area that Telstra aren't even going to be in 3 years' time? No, towers. Telstra won't buy it.
Okay, can we, need to leave shortly. Councillor Bailey, what were your thoughts?
I'm for this multi-purpose, building.
Yep.
Maybe in Hamilton.
Okay. And the Pelham Tower?
Yes. And also, we've been talking about this for a while. I'll go along with Anthony, the pool cover at Bothell, the roof might over it to cover it, which we have talked about for a fair while, a few years now.
I guess we'd have to go to an engineer or a communications expert to do it. Last time they said they'd do it for 30 grand, they did a study.
We need the best person.
Funds to do the study. We're all on email. Can we circulate some suggestions and ideas and build a plan to go to them within the next week? And so to actually build on some suggestions and toss it around. We don't need to meet to do this. Now we can use modern communications to fix some ideas about and just see where we end up.
Well, I think isn't having them, Mr. Green.
can do one project.
And I can start with the government because it's
but that one I can't do because I don't happen to have.
So we need to engage someone that can do that. And yep. Have you anyone suggest how to find out who's the best person?
Did you talk to Telstra, but that was the best. And they said yeah. No, we would not have power.
So we have to start off with a motion.
Well, we'll get a wide lane.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit concerned about where this conversation is going. Is it in the ratepayers' interest to own a telecommunications tower? That's what we're discussing, yes or no?
No, we don't own it.
Well, that's what they're discussing. That's what everyone is supporting. Council buying the land.
Yes.
Getting a grant to build the tower, and then we have to run it and maintain it. Is that where?
No.
Yes. That's what it's all about.
No,
that's what it's all about.
We can't give it to Telstra.
We have to own the tower. I'm concerned about what this council is letting itself in for.
That's
what
I'm saying. Multi-purpose building because we can own it.
And design it and cost it out for us to actually have something that we can submit with the grant application.
Sure.
So he could design it so that it's like toilets, showers, a commercial kitchen.
We would pick his design
for
to Bottle and we would use it here to start off with. We've already got the design for it.
No, not as such. That was for something different. But
he could call it something different.
For it at a cost.
But these are just one page, they're just applications.
No, the application is more than one page, Adam, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, this is a very detailed, very detailed budget, very detailed.
The program like that.
Yeah, and detailed how it is going to help with the recovery of from, you know.
Let's say we knock the telecommunications tower on there, but let's say we go for the multi-purpose centre there. So what are we looking at? Like a commercial kitchen that and what, two meeting rooms or one meeting room?
Yeah, modern offices.
What do we envisage the status of the old school up there, the resource centre? Knock that down and
stay.
No,
that was
stay.
What I'm saying is that the people who've got a resident in the resource centre will probably want to move to the new centre, so that'll be the done.
And wouldn't it be more sense, because of buildings, car parks, everything, to go to the showgrounds and upgrade the showground, put the centre on the showgrounds?
They don't run the show. I'm not talking about.
Not on the ground, it's only near it. It's not a lot of room there.
Now, what are we talking about? The showground up here or showground?
We don't know a lot, though.
Yeah, but no, you can't put it on the showgrounds there because they're going to have the. Well, as far as I understand, they're going to have the show, and they have horse events there.
Oh, I don't mean the other one.
You didn't mean the show grounds, you meant
the area.
But we haven't got a lot of area around that down there.
Not a lot.
No, you'd be on Torches Ground.
We haven't got a lot of area up there, no. When you look at
you're going to have to be up here, and the benefits to Hamilton would be better there than there.
Where are we
going
to go?
Well, I'm sorry. They'd have to go up to Coney Quarry, they could start at the Coney Park there, up at your quarry.
At my quarry?
Yeah, they pay $5 each.
Oh, well, I suppose that would be fun to my life.
We're not getting anywhere.
You can do it. There's plenty of room up there.
You can do a part of it.
So is that project?
Let's land on that block in
Bristol. So what sort of material are you going to construct it out?
Cinder block.
Gold plate.
We'll leave it at
the art. We're not shovel ready. No, we haven't had enough discussion about this. Just listening to the conversation. We're all up in the air. We've all got different ideas. We really need to sit down and work about it. If we miss out on this grant, there will be another one.
But all we're after at the moment is the concept. We don't have to finalise how the parking is and all that. That's going to happen.
That will happen.
All we want to do is get the grant, then we'll do the rest.
With regard to this grant, if we say we're going to build a building either here or over at the showgrounds, do we need to put in a costing for that?
Yes.
So where are we going to get the costing for?
We'll work the costing out.
But where are you going to safeguard the situation?
Where councillors wish it to be
situated. We
haven't decided anything. That's why I'm saying we should have a discussion over time, like we will be all over.
I think we should leave it and what Councillor Hall said. And have a workshop.
Yep.
It's too thrown out at the end of the
week.
Well, not to count, but not to.
We'll have to wait for the next round.
We'll have to wait for the next round.
So, but you can do your
tour. There ain't
going to
be another round.
Excuse me,
too rushed.
I'm
more than happy to put the application in for a multi purpose centre here. And if you want it in Hamilton, yes. If you wanted a Bockwell, we'll just put Bockwell.
Let's put it on.
That doesn't matter. We'll put it on. Where it is, let's just build something.
Just with regard to that, if you were to put in an application for, say, $1.5 million,
yep.
Build that, right?
$2 million.
All of a sudden they say, yes, you've got it. Can we then not build a building to the value of $1.5 million?
Probably not.
Or, if we already have plans, and the plans we get builders to price it, and it comes at $2.5 million, are we going to throw the other million in? We're not.
No,
so
we're going to have
more
that
we don't put on into it.
We're going to build a smaller multi-purpose centre.
We've got one. We've got a school break. We're starting up.
Madam Mayor, I really think that we should just keep it simple. Don't lose the opportunity. Just plan and build a multi-purpose center up there at the Oval and keep it simple.
I'll do one.
It's done.
There's plenty of room out there.
Yeah, I think so.
I'll come back to you guys with this.
Okay, I'll go. Round the table. Do we throw money in now for multi-purpose? Yes or no? Simple as.
Yes.
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 Come on, Scotty.
I lost it.
Sorry, yes.
Tell me
the name.
Come on.
I didn't understand what you said. What did you say?
Multi-purpose building right up there.
Do we throw one in now for multi-purpose building?
That's
yes
it.
Or no?
Yes or no?
And we can tie that one back to the fires.
No, let us
on
down
the
down
night
down
of the fires, I was getting ready to set this building up as a recovery centre. Okay,
so
right.
Yes,
we ended up going
right,
but we were setting it up.
As long as we don't go to the fund there, I'll go
here. Councillor Archer, are you?
No, I'm not supporting me. No,
not supporting. Councillor
Archer,
not
supporting. I'd like to do the. Oh,
well enough. Before
I go in,
I'm going
to
give you the
look. Oh, what's that? You've got the numbers.
You've got the numbers.
Go.
It was 3 no's and the rest yes's. Yes, yes.
Who's the 3 no?
I am one, Councillor Archer, Councillor
Bowman.
Yeah,
okay.
So that would be the main project, the main one, and there might be some little ones that will be thrown together.
I'm really looking for a rush for this.
It's okay.
It is a rush because.
It will be rushed, but you might have
a doubt. It's a discussion. So no. It's been 3 or 4 hours since I've been
going. We've got time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps able to keep draft down as an MR panelist to read.
I've never seen the application, comes out tomorrow.
The application comes out tomorrow.
Website opens tomorrow, I believe.
Too rushed.
It is rushed, but we've got a small window of opportunity.
So how much money do we need to get out of the budget to
push on? Worry about that
money. Well, don't you need some seed funds or whatever?
The only thing we need is we'll have to pay for the DA.
Well, surely you might have enough money to do that in a little bit, but we'll grow.
Pretty sure
we'll
have to
pay for the DA. Okay, recommend that. The general manager be authorised to sign and seal the Gulf Policy Centre in Brisbane, Bruce and Woodside, the Capital Grant Program Agreement. Councillor
yes.
Honour.
Yes.
Cassidy.
That's the one that.
Laura is going to get.
And we've got $30,000.
Thank you, Adam. Well done.
Quite continue again.
Very good, Adam.
Yeah. And in that, there's $5,000 to hire a project manager. So we don't need to use our own staff.
Good.
Okay. Because we are running out of resources.
Four against. All agree to that one. Thank you, Gary.
Which one now?
That's your which 14.
And the question relates
to general manager to authorize the science field of local centennial regional tourism require a capital grant program. 17.15. Request for rates commission that the council remit a general rate on property.
Thank you.
No, it would be Jason, who's a football expert, and Deputy Pound.
So we went to, Jason can go, but I'm assuming it's to do with that, but effectively it was sort of making sure our infrastructure's right for football, extending it to women so that not a lot of rural areas have suitable women's change rooms, night lighting in Washington. I did ask Jason, but the night lights at Bothwell aren't up to standard, so these are sort of the discussion points, but it's about 4 years ago, I can't really remember. That's about all it was. It appears to me that they want submissions, is it? What do they want?
In here it says you can conduct face-to-face.
Stakeholders can submit submissions. But I'm nearly thinking that if people are interested, they could go to the meeting at Bell Reeve.
It's got key milestones, activities, and dates, time, estimated. And that goes right up to December.
Yeah.
It's really information that could be out there to the community. Perhaps.
I mean, probably might be something that the chairman of the football club might go to, for example, and see, you know, see what sort of money there is. Or Jason, that good luck getting someone down to Bell Reeve at 8 o'clock at night this time of year.
And perhaps
we could
think
there
is an online session.
There's not an online session, but
he just did the online.
Who does that? You do it.
Jason.
It says here, dedicated 30-minute online session for local government areas to take you through the project.
Could we leave that with you to discuss with Jason,
Services? Yeah, you just got to go on that website, I think.
And for is there any local footballers or anything need to be involved and included?
We only ever had one meeting. Jason's more up to the requirements of this. Like, it's 40 years since I played football. I don't know if that's the sort of issue that I've
had. It's
40 years since you played a cross football game, but now you play a concert football game.
All right, well, thank you, councillors. I will now close the meeting.